Live from the Allstate Skyline Studio.
This is the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
How you doing, everybody? Steve Cochran Show. Justin Kaufman in for Steve, but here alongside Dave Bennett, Mary Vanderbilt, Steve Bersanich. The crew, the trusted crew.
Good morning. Welcome back. Morning. You're becoming a semi-regular again.
I love it. I love it. Nice. I love it for a little bit. For about an hour, then it gets, oh, you guys.
Well, wait a minute. You were on the air till what time last night?
Till 10 o'clock last night. 10 o'clock. But I'm back.
Oh, no. Another short night, huh?
So you had an eight-hour break. That's reasonable.
I've learned to never complain about my situation when sitting next to Dave Bennett. Because when Northwestern basketball is going on, and I was able to see this happen while we worked together, I don't know how you would do it. It'd be like, and that's it. It's the fourth quarter. I've got to go downtown and get back on the air.
And I never said that. And it was never the fourth quarter.
I was like, that's a game. Northwestern wins, and I'll be on in 15 minutes.
Yeah, well, sometimes.
So, yeah. Mary, how are you?
I'm good.
Yeah? How are the roads today?
It feels like Friday.
It does, doesn't it?
For some reason. But we got the big block party tomorrow.
Ooh.
It's going to be very exciting.
I know. I'll be out.
Yeah.
I'll be out. Yeah. I'm excited about that. Just for the fact that there's a parade. They're going to, the WGN Morning News puts on that parade at 9 o'clock. So we get to do radio play-by-play for a parade.
Ooh, there you go, Dave.
We've done some of that.
Have you?
Oh, yeah. Did the Cubs parade a couple of years ago. Did coverage of the Blackhawks parade and was reporting on that.
But that's a different type of parade. You're just waiting for the players and cars and people and family members go by. But are you prepared to do play-by-play for a float? For here come the Kiwanis.
Yeah, what's the theme of this?
I have a list of the
No, you got to do it all improv.
You're guessing what that float is.
You're all forgetting Dave Bennett is a Grand Marshal Emeritus.
Yes, that's
so
right.
He's got the expertise that none of us have about parades.
When it comes to parades, you got your guy right here.
He's still sleeping with his banner.
That's not exactly, Mary.
Yeah.
It's your blankie.
I don't think my wife would go for that, really.
Yeah. Well, we're looking forward to it tomorrow, the block party. We're going to miss Super Joe. He just told me he's going to be in Vegas tomorrow.
Vegas, baby.
Vegas, baby.
What is it? Another bachelor party?
Another bachelor party.
Oh,
my buddy Chris is getting married.
He's never been to Vegas.
But you've never been.
You might never come back.
Yeah, a little scared about that.
If that's just like the movie, this could be scary.
No, it's going to eat you alive, buddy.
Scary for everybody.
It's going to eat you alive, or you'll get there and go, oh, there's $15 to play one hand at blackjack? Man, I think I'll take a break. I'm going to get back to Chicago. That's the Vegas. I remember when I would be so bent out of shape because they had $5 or $10 tables. So you're like, where are the $5 tables? And then I went to Vegas probably about a year ago, and I couldn't believe that everything there now is $15, $20, $25 a hand.
Well, you have to get off the strip. You have to get off.
Who's
the
off
big?
The, I'm not sending Joe off the strip.
Okay, not off the strip, but you have to get out of the Bellagio.
Yeah, right.
Get out of the big.
Where are you staying,
the Wynn,
Joe?
And all that.
I'm staying at the Palm.
Yeah, see, He's right in there. He's in it. And this is a younger generation, Dave. They're not going to go to the place that still allows smoking, and the Tropicana, if that's even there anymore. He's going to go to the high-end places that Britney Spears goes to. He's going to be at... He wants to see the celebrities, and he's willing to drop 25 a hand, right? Right, Joe?
Absolutely. You always got the slot machines to fall back on, too.
No. Don't listen to Grzanich. Do not touch the slot machines. That is just not Vegas rolling. That's Grzanich rolling.
I see Super Joe as a craps guy.
I can see him.
Oh, no doubt. And right. And what's the game with the ball and the spinning roulette?
Yeah, it's got to be a high energy.
I'm going to win again, obviously.
Right, it's a little different when you're at a carnival and you're in a casino.
Yeah,
you're really
at shoe carnival.
I can't wait till you're playing with the other folks in the casino and you're like, oh yeah, the ball and the spinny thing.
The spinny thing. Can you point me towards the spinny thing, please?
You know, when you play craps in Vegas, go to Caesar's Palace. I think they'll ask you where you're from at some point. Small talk will happen. You'll say Chicago, and they'll go, oh, Dicka was just in here like a week ago. Like, I guarantee every time That's what happens. It's that's the Chicago go-to. I think it's fake. It's just their way of attaching or connecting with a Chicagoan.
The coach? He was here?
Yeah. Well, I'll play some more.
I sat at a blackjack table with Abe Gibran many years ago in Vegas.
That's weird.
Speaking of former Bears coaches.
That's a great way to start this morning as we talk about playing blackjack with old Bears coaches. We got a great show lined up. Chuck Todd's coming up, of course, after 6:30. Gary Chico's going to be here. Talk about life after the mayoral election. Also, we're going to have Josh Hills in for Dean. Dean's busy. Is Dean going to be out at the block party tomorrow?
Yes, okay, he will be there.
All right. He's already out there today. He's prepping.
He was going. What did he tell us, Mary? I think he was going to L.A. today
for
Jet Set. Lion King stuff.
For Lion King. Yep. Yeah.
He'll definitely be back tomorrow.
Okay, great. So Dean out today. Josh Hill in from Fansided. Also, T. Marie Hannibal will be here. She's got a brand new book, The Warrior Code. You may know her. She's a reality star from Fox TV. And also Betsy Ziegler will be here as well from 1871. Talk about the big move for Accenture and bringing tech jobs to Chicago and whether or not Chicago is still a tech town. So all that coming up.
From the Steve Cochran Auditorium in the lovely Sunrise Hotel, it's time to get your kicks.
Get your kicks. Don't keep
your kicks. With the top 6 at 6, sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60 Minute Men.
All right, time for your top 6 at 6 this morning on the Steve Cochran Show. Let's start with number 1. New Orleans, of course, already flooded, but more rain on the way. Potential tropical storm Barry is hitting the Gulf today. Could turn into a hurricane by this weekend, and the Mississippi River expected to rise 19 to 20 feet, the same height as the levees that protect the city. An early start to the hurricane season. Steve Grzanich, I know you're kind of are you a hurricane guy?
I'm a weather geek. Yeah, I've been watching this very closely.
It is kind of early, right? I mean, it seems like August is when it starts.
June 1st is when the season begins. But you're right, it is early. We don't normally see big storms this early in the season. And the thing that's scary about this one coming, as you mentioned, this river up near 19 or 20 feet, just a little bit of storm surge is going to overtop that levee. So people are under the gun in New Orleans in a big way. There was a tornado there yesterday in New Orleans, downtown New Orleans.
I have some good friends there who were texting us some pictures last night, and I mean, it looked like there had already been a hurricane, and the hurricane hasn't even arrived yet. But buildings with water up to like 5 feet over the entrance of these buildings.
Jeez.
You just think
after the last couple of years of hurricanes and obviously with climate change, you thought, you know, oh, that's going to be it. But you're going to keep seeing this and it's going to keep getting bigger and bigger. And we're seeing that. It's a perfect example where rainstorms flood the city out and then the hurricane
then
comes.
The hurricane.
Yeah, and it's not just New Orleans. Over the last week, we've seen Washington, D.C.
Yep.
There have been other cities, too, that have had these just monstrous rains. Even us here in Chicago, we had a rainstorm last week. 2 inches of rain in an hour. Those kinds of
storms. Yeah, that was crazy. Yeah. What is the name of the hurricane? Do we know
They're going with Barry.
That's Tropical Storm Barry, though.
It will become Hurricane Barry.
Oh, so they're starting with B's, working their way in?
It's Tropical Storm Barry, and then when it becomes Hurricane, it's Hurricane Bear.
Oh,
it's just like
Bear
they
down.
Just shorten it.
Yes.
Next. The Sun-Times reporting yesterday that Alderman Ed Burke had a burner phone. Come on, I can't even finish the sentence. That the feds were not aware of. When did this alderman turn into a character from The Wire? He's got a burner phone.
Yeah.
So Ed Burke goes from, I don't use phones, to, I'll just use burner phones.
Why do you need a burner phone?
Why does anybody need a burner phone?
And how did they find out he had it? Aren't they supposed to, like, get rid of a burner phone?
I'll bet any money someone's like, you didn't hear it from me.
Yeah.
And he got one of those to the Sun-Times, right? I don't want to say anything bad about my Uncle Ed, but he's got a burner phone.
Not for nothing.
Steve nailed it. Why does a politician need a burner phone?
Big fan of the burner phone.
Mm. Mm-hmm. All right.
He's bringing one to Vegas.
You know it.
And I also want to know if that burner phone's like a flip phone. It's like a real throwaway. There's no text. There's a smartphone on there.
Are there burner phones that aren't flip phones?
I would think at this point they're all smartphones.
You don't think it's an iPhone X, dude?
Yeah. I mean, it's like an iPhone 6, and he's like, yeah, these are worthless at this point. Alligator Watch still going strong, and there are now T-shirts. The Humboldt Park Lagoon is home to Chicago's biggest celebrity since Jussie Smollett. Alligator Bob will get him, though, right?
That's what he says.
Day two went, and last night, we're going to talk about it a little bit later. Last night, this story that went from, I think it to be annoying and obnoxious, as it kind of went on, it showed like the, you know, it's like, kind of like we're all dancing for the millennium. But, you know, yesterday, it really turned in a way that in the when it was dusk, and I was on the air last night, and there was a band came out and played for all the volunteer onlookers. It became Alligator Bob showed up to talk to the crowd, and they all cheered him on, and he canoed away. And it just, I don't know, it started to get national news that Chicago is the best in the way that they could create a party around this alligator in the lagoon.
Yeah, and Block Club Chicago, you mentioned the t-shirts. Mm-hmm. They have the Gator Watch 2018, but they also ran a poll yesterday to name the gator.
Yeah.
Chance the Snapper is the one.
Which really, I think that's a misleading name. He hasn't snapped at anybody.
He hasn't even shown up. Where the heck is he?
That'd be a great name for a turtle.
Right.
But a snapping turtle, but not an alligator.
I still think that this is just one big promotion for the movie Crawl, which comes out today.
Justin, I swear to God, I thought the same thing yesterday when this thing started happening.
Yes, it's a hoax.
And then I went home and saw that commercial. I'm like, wait a second. What are the chances of this?
And I believe it's animatronic. So they're going to get there and it's going to go, watch Crawl. Go to theater, watch Crawl.
You think it's like Jungle Cruise?
Yeah, be like, exactly. It's the same technology.
And the hippos will start coming up.
So this is a cool tech story. It's a tech and crime story. A cyclist, it was a terrible story, but the cyclist was hit and run by a man on one of these new electric scooters. Now, the man is suing the scooter companies. Why? Because of GPS. They should know exactly who was riding the scooter when it was used to commit a crime. Will they give up the info? They have to sue to get the info. And that's such an interesting concept here with technology. Is you're right. If you get one of those electric scooters and you use your app to use it, you automatically, they know where you're at all times.
And they know who you are.
And they know who you are. And they got a picture and everything. So the idea that you have to put a lawsuit against them to give them the information when a crime happens, it's an interesting moment, I think, in the history of technology of whether or not that's readily available or if that's private information.
Have you guys ridden one yet?
Yeah.
No.
No.
Have you thrown one into a tree yet?
I have not thrown one into the tree or garbage, but I did let Miles try one out, and he fell off it.
Did he have a helmet on?
No, it was in the park. It was right there. And my wife was like, go a little faster. And he went faster. And I don't like an awkward 12-year-old. It's like, I don't know what that means. And my legs and blood. He fell off and he skinned his knee. And I'm like, well, that's why you got to be 18 to ride these things, I guess. But we did it in the park. And then, you know, we were practicing for a while. And I forgot that they charge you by the minute or whatever. And so when we closed the app and I was checking out, it was like $16. I'm like, nah, that was not worth that experiment to get a skinned knee.
It's not like minutes. Divi where you get a flat rate for 30 minutes.
It's like a Uber.
Per minute?
Where it counts up, like on how far you go. And in our case, we were just kind of going around in a circle. It's just charging us. I'm like, well, that's the end of the scooter experiment. We're going to walk from here on out. A new study says that supplements don't work to decrease heart disease. And another new study says a small glass of juice or soda, a day is linked to an increased risk of cancer. Dave, you rolled your eyes. Are you drinking a small glass of juice every morning?
I drink celery juice.
Yeah, what kind of juice are they talking?
I think it's all about the sugar. I think that's the whole point of this, is saying that.
Celery juice is 100% sugar.
Right, Dave? Thanks, Super Joe.
Yeah, I mean, that's how you get your day going.
Is this really something new? We've known that Diet Coke or whatever.
I can understand
can
if you're doing
your risk.
Exactly, but I can understand if you're doing a small glass of Diet Coke or Jolt or Mountain Dew, Extreme Mountain Dew, that you'd be, you're on your way to cancer land, right? That's bad for you. But a small glass of orange juice or a small glass of...
I don't know that that's bad. I mean...
I know, they're saying it's bad. Studies don't lie, Dave.
Oh, that's right. Studies are always right.
Until tomorrow when they say, a glass of juice will save your life. That's how studies work. So anyway.
We'll find out tomorrow the study was funded by the tobacco industry.
Exactly. A cigarette a morning, a cigarette a day keeps the juice cancer away. And the White Sox net crew's busy. They're putting up the protective nets at the rate. They'll be up and active when the Sox come back to play the Marlins on July 22nd.
Good for them. They didn't waste any time.
You know, I got to say, I sat pretty close for the Cubs Sox. I sat on the first base line, maybe 10 rows up.
Hey, you know somebody?
I do. I knew a couple people. Rhymes with Schmod Bamley. It's okay. Anyway, where the seats were was right there. I turned my head and I was like, oh, this is prime line drive territory. Mm-hmm. It was the first time, I think, in a baseball experience where I was like, because the Nets aren't up yet, that I was a little bit, I was a little bit on edge. Like every time a left-handed hitter came up, I was like, oh, I should pay attention to every single pitch. It's not like Wrigley where you're like, this is a party margarita, yeah. You know, you're at Sox, you're Sox Park, and I felt like I was ready to go. Luckily, nothing came my way. I was ready, though. My brother, he was like, I'm going to duck. I'm like, not me, man. I'm going for it.
I would think people would be more aware now than they had been if you're sitting at a game with all the attention this has gotten over the past month or since early May when the little girl was hit in Houston.
Yeah.
You would think that people would be really on their toes. I was watching the All-Star game the other night.
Cared.
People are on their phones, especially after what they probably paid for those tickets for the All-Star game.
Yeah.
Put your phone down.
Well, that's what I'm glad to have the Nets up, because now I can look at my phone. I can have conversations that don't have anything to do with the baseball game.
So you don't have to watch the game.
I don't have to watch the game. That's the thank you very much, Major League Baseball, that you have protected me for when to not watch a game. That's
you could also go to a bar and not watch the game.
It's nice out there. They got nachos, loaded helmet nachos.
And you know what? I've got 400 followers on Instagram. They all need to know I'm at the All-Star game. Here's my selfie. Here's another one.
There it is, right? See? All right, that's Top 6 and 6.
That's it!
That's all today for the Top 6 and 6.
No more!
Sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60 Minute Men.
Welcome to Sunday.
Wait a second.
What day is it? The date's
wrong. May. Thursday.
What year?
Wait, what?
Hello, you there, boy.
Me, sir?
Yes, you, my good fella. What day is today?
Today?
From NBC News in Washington, the longest-running show in television history. This is Meet the Press with Chuck Todd.
It's Thursday here on the Steve Cochran Show, and you know what that means. A visit from Chuck Todd, the host of Meet the Press, MTP Daily. Great to have Chuck on the line. Chuck, thanks for being here, as you do every Thursday.
Good morning.
Good morning. All right, lots to talk about, so why don't we get into it right away. I guess the top story is just the continuing saga around the Labor Secretary, Acosta, and his denial that he did anything wrong in the prosecution of Jeffrey Epstein years ago, and whether or not he should stay as the Labor Secretary. This continues to play out, but are we past the storm? Was his remarks about going through the case and pushing back on the press sufficient enough for him to keep his job?
In isolation, I might say that, yeah, he might have done enough. But the interview with one of the victims yesterday on the Today Show by my colleague Savannah Guthrie feels, when you hear excerpts from that interview again and then you watch Acosta, he seemed just to be tone deaf about the whole thing. And I think what Acosta should be hearing now is the fact that I think that you're going to hear more victims come out. Mm-hmm. Look, these victims at the time, you know, he took advantage of women in girls in difficult circumstances, maybe tough, you know, didn't have good parenting at home or were on the edge of poverty or on the edge of homelessness and things like that. So, you know, and obviously they targeted these types of girls because they thought, well, they're less likely to go to authority, so they're less likely to do these things. I think now, you know, with the victim yesterday who spoke out, some of these girls are now in their 30s. I just think that's what Acosta, to me, is should fear next, is more victims coming out, more attention to the details of what happened, and sort of like what we saw with Michigan State, remember that, in the gymnastics team, it didn't go away, it got bigger.
Right.
It wouldn't surprise me if this not only didn't go away, it got bigger.
Well, it seems to be a political liability for the president, who not only had relationships with Jeffrey Epstein, which was years ago, I want to make that clear, but at the same time, you know, this is his administration, this is his choice to run the Labor Department. So the question just becomes, is there a point where the president says enough is enough and I'm going to move on from this guy?
Well, I think that was part of the reason why he told me he had to do this press conference. Go, you got to defend yourself. I'm not defending you. But also part of it was a test to see, you know, take this out of the White House. You know, as you point out, you know, he didn't like the fact that his name is connected to Epstein in different ways as a social, certainly in a social capacity. But, you know, what's really frustrating about this is that you saw the statement by Bill Clinton saying, you know, and Bill Clinton used to use his plane. And here's the thing. I'm going to take both Bill Clinton and Donald Trump at their word that they didn't. That they didn't ever do the things that Epstein did. I don't believe that. But here's the thing. This is one of those cases where you feel like these are rich, powerful people who, well, you know, they look the other way. Maybe they didn't know the full details of what he did, but they certainly knew that he was weird. Okay? I mean, even Trump himself was quoted 15 years ago saying, oh, yeah, Jeffrey, he likes him a little young. Right. You know, as sort of a ha-ha thing. And this is the part of this that I think we're going through this culture. It's like, how many powerful people have protected other powerful people over the years? I mean, we know it's a story as old as wealth, but that's what this story is. We shouldn't forget.
Yeah. And also, I'm surprised. I guess I'm not surprised, but I'm as divisive as politically as this has been. You've seen a lot of supporters on both sides of the aisle, whether you're liberal or conservative, Republican or Democrat, sort of point fingers about everybody who's been involved with Jeffrey Epstein in the past.
I know.
It's a come on moment because you're like, this is a really awful, filthy, terrible crime that he has been alleged of committing. And I feel like the last thing I want to think about is which political party protected him more.
It's funny you say that. I felt uncomfortable. I didn't like doing the story yesterday on my program for one reason. I didn't want people to think I was covering it for political reasons.
Yeah.
You know, because of that. I mean, I completely, you know, look, whataboutism is going to break us. I am convinced it's going to break us. Each party just refused to accept character flaws of their own without first saying, did you see what so-and-so did over there on the other side? It's a constant refrain in our sort of tribal nature. But the Epstein thing, really, it's like, why are all the resignations one-sided on this with Acosta, right? It's just like, are we really, is morality partisan? Is that what we've decided? Morality is partisan? That's a bad place for us to be if it is.
Let's talk about some of the news happening today. The Fed, Jerome Powell, the Fed chair, said, you know, there's a chance that he might cut the rate, which is something that the president's been railing about on Twitter for months now, years. But this is a big thing. And I read this morning, and I didn't realize that this may have to do with President Trump and his continuing battle with China, because if you cut the rates, it helps the central bank in China. Is that a cynical way to look at what the Fed is thinking about doing?
Wants is lower interest rates so that you can continue this sort of euphoric feel in the stock market and it gives the perception of a humming economy. Now, the reason Powell stated as to why he was thinking about cutting rates is because of the tariffs and the uncertainty of global trade. Well, that's code for the uncertainty of President Trump's various tariff wars, right, with the EU, with China, with all this. And so that uncertainty and the slowdown in business investment, it's the reasoning he's saying he's considering lowering a rate, which, I mean, that is, it seems, what Trump has been wanting to do. Is he wanted the rates lowered because he gives him, to take him at his word, it gives him more freedom to negotiate with Trump. That would be what he would argue. If you lower interest rates here, it loosens things up a little bit so that he can negotiate and be tough and issue a new tariff if necessary on China. But that's being very generous with
giving. Yeah, right. Well, we're having a little bit of phone trouble with you. Just kind of.
Well, I don't think it's phone trouble. It's my dog. I apologize for that. Well, she's a little ticked off. Somebody just, you know, somebody dared walk by the house with a dog, and you know, she runs this house. Sorry.
Well, maybe we'll ask one more question for. It's really just about the Democrat. You know, obviously the candidates for president 2020. They're going to do the lottery for the next debate. But the more interesting thing was the numbers. I don't think we've talked to you since the numbers came out about how much they've raised in the last quarter. Elizabeth Warren was very interesting in the way that she didn't do much fundraising in a traditional model, but she got a lot of donations to get a huge, substantial amount of money without having to go and do all these formal fundraising events that most candidates do.
Well, look, she appears to have built a similar fundraising machine that Bernie Sanders built 4 years ago and still has today. And the fact is that Sanders never holds expense either. And it is, what it means is that Warren got, assuming this comes through and she's doing this with can mechanism. It just puts her in an I think, comfortable and powerful position as sort of, right now, I think, the leading progressive candidate. I mean, I think if you look at this, and I think we're starting to see this, it's turning into two primaries, sort of a progressive primary, mostly between Warren and Sanders, you know, with people like de Blasio and all that, and trying to appeal to that same group of voters. And then the group sort of in the Biden lane, trying to be like the pragmatists, I guess, if you will. And I think we're starting to see, and right now I think Elizabeth Warren has inched ahead of Sanders as the leader of the progressives.
Chuck Todd joins us every Thursday here on the Steve Cochran Show, and he did today. Chuck, what do you got coming up on the show this weekend?
Well, I should be, I'm going to have to do FEC as well as your journal. Actually, new primary numbers today on MTP Daily, and we'll have new general election numbers on Sunday on Meet the Press Sunday.
Awesome. Chuck, thanks for joining us.
All right.
There you go. Chuck Todd. I got to get that phone. I feel like maybe, I don't know, maybe the phone was in his dog's mouth.
Or he was underwater somewhere.
Maybe somebody's hacked into his phone. And
maybe, yeah. You didn't think about that, Grisanti.
Oh, yeah.
You're always thinking ahead.
It's a burner.
It's a burner.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
720 WGN, Steve Cochran Show. I'm Justin Kaufman in for Steve. Dave and Mary and Steve Grisanti are here as well. Interesting to talk to Chuck Todd, even though his phone was extremely irritating this morning. I think he did it on purpose. He knew Cochran wasn't going to be here, so he used his, like Mary said, his burner phone. But yeah, interesting. You know, this thing is we talk about Democrats and everybody lining up to try and get the nomination. Pete Buttigieg, the mayor from South Bend, Indiana, today unveiling a new plan. He has a comprehensive plan to address racial inequality in this country. He says he has a whole thing and he wants to put money towards it and everything like that, but seems to be one of the first candidates to actually have a comprehensive platform around race in this upcoming election. So that's interesting. I know that Steve Grisanti, you've been following him, and that's something that we've heard. I mean, I think there's been a lot of platforms from different candidates on health care, and we've had, obviously, on some of the other inequalities in this country, and I think race is a big play, and it's kind of interesting that the mayor of South Bend is the white mayor from South Bend is the one who's leading the charge.
Yeah, and it's very important for Mayor Pete because he's polling less than single digits, really. 1-3% where African Americans are concerned. They just haven't come on to his campaign yet.
Right.
And so I think he's kind of got this in mind, too, partly as he releases this plan today. I think he's going to need the support to move anywhere, especially, you know, some of the first contests like South Carolina. He's going to need more African
Americans. And I think the cynics in us will say this is all about a play for the black vote. But for him, he calls it the Douglas Plan, based on Frederick Douglass. He had a quote. He was on NPR. He said, if you're a white candidate, it's twice as important for you to be talking about racial inequity and not just describing the problem, which is fashionable in politics, but actually talking about what we're going to do about it and describing the outcomes we're trying to solve for.
Yeah, and I think you could also give him a little bit of more street cred, too, because he's dealing with this firsthand at home. He's had a couple of issues, some big issues, national issues, right, with police shootings in his community. So I think you know, he's at the front end of this conversation.
There you go. 312-981-7200 if you want to get in on the conversation. Coming up in the 7 o'clock hour, Gary Chico is going to join us. He's taking he's moving from politics and he's joining the LISC, which is a group that invests in neighborhood organizations that are trying to do good. And so we'll talk about what is needed in Chicago from his vantage point, and also about what life is like after you lose an election. start with that. Did you ever lose an election, Dave Ennett?
Yeah, I think I ran for treasurer in high school. I think I lost.
What was the mourning period? I mean, when you lost, did it take months, years?
Hours. I don't think I really wanted to be treasurer anyway.
Yeah, there you go. Joe, you're going to Vegas. Was there any election related to going to Vegas for the bachelor party? Where, like, you're elected to be in charge of gambling, strip clubs?
Yeah, there's a couple co-best men. So I think that, you know, we don't have as much of a dictatorship as much as it is, you know, a little more a power share.
How does that
situation
play out if you have a co-best man? How's that going to work? How many best men would that be?
Just two. But, you know, they've been taking in a lot of suggestions and really just coming back with what they want to do.
Are you worried there's going to be a power struggle in the moment?
Like, not with me. Yeah.
Are you one of them?
Maybe. No. But I'll take control at some point.
I was a co-best man
oh,
once.
Oh, yeah. How'd it go?
And I was in charge of the toast, and the other best man was in charge of the bachelor party.
Mm.
That's
oh,
how
boy.
They split it
That's
up.
A smart move. No. I'm not sure I agree with the co-best men running a party at the same time, because you're going to have to make decisions and pivot. Pivoting is a big part of a bachelor party, as someone who has planned and been a part of one. I feel like that's you got to pivot. So what happens when you want to pivot, but the other guy doesn't want to pivot yet? It's going to get nasty.
Yeah, we just split into two different groups and see who has more fun, basically.
Well, who hands out the rings at the wedding? Who does that? Which
flip
one?
A coin
yeah.
beforehand. Yeah.
See, more worried about Vegas.
Yeah, sorry, my daughter was a co-maid of honor. That was kind of, that didn't work very well.
That means two speeches, right?
Yeah.
Oh, that's a good point.
It was just kind of, you know, with girls, it's a little different. I don't know. It worked out okay, but I don't know. It's a little awkward.
Yeah, that means two speeches of, I said I wasn't going to cry.
Yeah, they were like, well, I'm her good friend. Well, no, I'm her good friend. You know, it was just kind of weird.
I see it as a co-best man would be, one guy will say, that's fine. That's cool. You too.
Yeah.
You do
it. Guys, I don't think guys are a problem. Yeah.
But sometimes it can be competitive, though. If you have a group of friends who are all very close and you've selected one of them to do, it can create a little bit of turmoil.
The guy speeches are going to be like, I'm not a really good speaker. I'm not really a speaker, but I just want to say I'm really happy for you, and here's to Jason and Vanessa, and I'm really looking forward to being part of your life.
Yeah.
That was the case in my situation. It was like, oh, well, you're the speaker, you do the speech.
Yeah, right.
I'll do the party.
Oh, that's the worst,
what
right?
What point do you say? Her name's not Vanessa.
Yeah, and she's a lot
Vanessa?
Better than his other girlfriends
are. Yeah, right. Mary, that's still going to be it. I remember when you were with Jennifer, she was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Vanessa, you're pretty cool, too. Anyway, I can hire as a consultant, Joe, if you want to, if you're the person who's getting married needs a, if the co-best man needs some coaching on the speech.
I'll put your number in my burner phone.
There you go. WGN Morning News is throwing its fourth annual block party tomorrow in downtown Naperville, and we're going along for the ride. Go to WGNradio.com/events for details. Coming up, the stories that matter with Steve Grzanich from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio.
I want to say hi to my friend Pat McGann, who's been on the road.
I parked on Lower Wacker. It was a little skeevy down there. It's just dingy.
Yeah, well, people
it's
don't,
Lower Wacker.
Right,
what do you think?
Leave.
Dust? Dude, I love Lower Wacker, by the way. If you want to like feel like a man, effectively use Lower Wacker. Like, if I had my wife in the car and I, like, let me just cut through here. Like, wow, you know how to use Lower Wacker? Like, that is a man's road. A lot of people do not go down there. Strong Chicagoans are
Nothing's
down there.
Nothing's labeled. You don't know where you're going to get off.
No.
Yeah. Right.
It's
There's
just like,
curves.
Go towards the light. It's like the most you could recreate, I think, the experience of death. It's just like, this is unknown and scary, but I'm going to go towards the light,
ever.
And then you're out in the paradise.
It's foolproof for a guy like me. You can't get lost. On Lower Wacker. It goes from here to there and there to here. That's it.
The GPS does not work down there, though, in a lot of spots.
Which is why it's great, because I know there's only you can't get lost.
Yeah, you gotta know it.
Even a guy that got lost in a parking garage, I can't get lost on Lower Wacker.
Steve has obviously not spent a lot of time on Lower Wacker Drive. There are a lot of ways to get lost.
Yeah,
Lower
you
Wacker
take a wrong exit,
drive,
you don't know where you are, you're like, huh?
He's talking about the thoroughfare that's straight from 290 to Navy Pier. If you stay on that stretch, you're like, you're fine. But if you take a right or a left, you do anything where you go to where there's a ramp,
well,
you're
and then
in
there's a couple of T's down, you know, and you could end up in the, you know, which way do I go, right or left? Mm. Oops. Here I
but
am.
I do not disagree with Pat. It is a man's road.
It is an underground. It is an underground expressway.
Yeah,
it's not a man's
speed
road.
Limit is 35. I've never seen anyone doing anything less than about 50 down. Not me, but other motorists. I mean, people. They look at it. It's like the Autobahn down there.
Yeah,
I love it. I'm down there every morning.
That's awesome. There's a new ordinance in city council. They're talking about drifting. And essentially what this is drag racing. And there is they're suggesting a $5,000 to $10,000 fine for those who drag race. And where the drag racing happens, Lower Wacker Drive. If you're in Lower Wacker and at night, and I used to do the download, and we'd be out of here after midnight, and I would take Lower Wacker home, and you would see the souped-up Honda Civics. You know, with the big tires and the big exhaust and the neon lights underneath, and they go flying by me like at 80 going down that stretch because nobody's down there at that time. I mean, it's very dangerous, but that is a big part of the Lower Wacker culture is drag racing at night.
Well, they're usually gone by the time I go through at like 4:30.
They're
usually done, but yeah,
they're done. That's when
I think Rizanich had some experience with that. Before I forgot he was telling me a story about the drag racing down there.
Yeah,
but he's not listening.
Yeah, I'm listening.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I saw a bad accident. I was working here 4th of July, so you know, a week ago I was here and I saw, you know, somebody T-boned up against one of the pillars, and I assume drag racing. I don't know for sure, but yeah, it's it can definitely be scary down there, no doubt about it.
Well, you can, if you're scared by the prospect of Lower Wacker Drive, you could always just listen to my podcast Lower Wacker Live.
Right.
Which is the making fun of the news. We do it every day. I'm not doing it today because I got to do this. Then I'm doing Extension 720 tonight. But
I thought you were actually down there broadcasting.
No, that's the idea. We want to give the illusion I'm down there with all the drug dealers and the
you know where it gets dicey is when you're going, if you're going towards 290 or where it splits, and if you go left, you go up by Harrison, the post, the old post office, and if you go right, you go to 290.
Yeah, Franklin there, and it doesn't explain it. There's a tiny sign that says 290 this way, and if you miss it, people veer off to the right.
People
and cut you off.
Yeah, they jump from the left to the right lane.
They need a bigger sign.
Yeah,
I saw a guy down there the other day riding a bicycle.
Yeah, like,
oh
that is
terrible.
Just,
this is not
that happens
end well.
A lot.
What always throws me, and I've talked to the alderman who's down here, and I've talked to police officers whenever you get a chance, but at night you come up the ramp there at Randolph, and you know, right on the right to Wacker to go to the West Loop where I live, and there will be a lot of people who are walking down the ramp, and they're doing it at night, and they're it's not sort of people looking for a place to stay, they're looking for something else. And I don't know, that talking to Alderman Riley, he said it's drugs and other things, but there is a whole very seedy community that's happening at night on Lower Wacker Drive. I don't want to. I feel like I'm giving away. Like everybody in Chicago is like, "What?" But or everyone's like, "Duh." It's one of the two. But there's something going on down there that shouldn't be going down there after.
Like
after
a farmer's
hour.
Market.
It could be a farmer's. Just like a farm.
Maybe people are going to the Billy Goat.
It's possible. They're like, you know, I got to get to the Billy Goat. I'm not. I don't want to be above ground, so I'm going to go below ground and just walk it. It could be.
Maybe it's a Bible study program.
It could be Bible study
could be
too.
A, yeah.
Next time, I'm going to stop and go, "Hey guys. What are you doing?" And see what we get. Does that work?
No, don't do that. Justin.
I suggest you not do that.
Yeah.
I'll stop. I'll get out of the car.
We like you. We'd like to see you the next day.
Hey, guys, I heard Mary said there's a Bible study around here. Which way? See, which ramp should I take? Yeah, I brought my Bible. Yeah, so the Lower Wacker. Yeah, but it's very interesting with the drag racing. The way that they're going to try to curtail that is if you get caught, you could be fined up to $10,000. Could you imagine that? That would take away so much from the... you wouldn't be able to light up the undercarriage of your Honda if you had to pay $10,000, right? Then what would you do?
Got to skip that next tank of NAS. Is that what it is?
It's always, I'm like, that's not an expensive car. That's not a cool car. That's always the time when you pull up to the stoplight and the guy's like, mmm, mmm, and you're like, that's not, I don't know what you've done there. You switched the muffler, but whatever you've done, that's an old Honda Civic. It's not that great.
That, sir, is not a spoiler.
That
is not helping your car go faster.
Because I had an old Honda Civic.
Did you soup it up? Did you put big tires on it and just put a spoiler in the whole
thing? I didn't even have power windows in that thing. And barely a heater. No air conditioning. And trust me, if I could get that thing up to 55 miles an hour, I considered it a good day.
The purple neon lights for Northwestern?
Like, where's the purple undercarriage?
No.
There's so much you could have done with that Civic.
I bought it brand new for $3,000.
You know, next time, let's take it into the shop and see what we can do.
We'll see what we can do.
Steve Cochran Show presents the most valuable person on the planet. The MVPP is sponsored by Mega Pros. They make it fun to get stuff done.
And now it's time to move on to a little something we call
the most valuable person on the planet.
Time for the most valuable person on the planet. Of course, today I feel like, I don't know, as we were figuring out who it was going to be. So maybe it's not just one person. Maybe it's a group of people. Maybe it's a band, if you will, a salsa band that showed up almost impromptu last night to the Humboldt Park Lagoon to provide music and entertainment for onlookers who wanted to see the popular alligator that is in the lagoon. How fun is that, huh? A salsa band shows up to the Humboldt Park Lagoon area, the promenade, where onlookers have come to try and get a glimpse of the alligator and, of course, Alligator Bob, as people surround and continue to be on alligator watch. But what's interesting about this story to me is that at first it started out as just a pet that was dumped in the lagoon. Second, it became a very obnoxious, annoying story with Twitter and social media going crazy, and including different Twitter handles, including one for the alligator itself.
Actually, more than one.
More than one.
More than one.
A poll, politicians getting in, trying to name the alligator. And everything about that seemed to be, I don't want to say staged, but just kind of hokey. And then the band shows up. And last night at dusk, I would say 50 to 100 people were treated to what became a community gathering around trying to, I don't know, save or honor or just be in the presence of the alligator. Alligator.
Were they
Bob.
Doing the salsa? Were people
they
actually
were,
dancing?
Yes. There's some great
fun.
Block Club Chicago had a tremendous video. There was people were there with their chairs. They started dancing.
Was anybody observing the lagoon?
I don't think so. I think at the end of the day,
everybody was having so much fun.
That's what I have to say. Like at the end of the day, it became quickly just kind of like a hipster type, story about, oh, it'd be great to see the alligator.
Yeah,
and it turned into a summer community story, only in Chicago. And I got to say, it's something that like I said, it went from hokey to very heartwarming in a matter of hours. And as Alligator Watch continues today in day three, you recognize that it may not necessarily be just about the alligator, but about the community that surrounds it. And I don't know, there's something that warms your heart around that as opposed to just being annoyed by the story. You don't agree, Dave?
No, I totally agree. It's got a different feel. Remember the bobcat a few years ago the Northwest side?
Bobcat sighting, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, this has a different feel to it.
It's funny. I mean, it's hilarious, and obviously it's great talk show fodder. We've been talking about it for a couple days now. And it's all been about the sentiment has always been about this is a big joke story. It's a joke story that they're trying to get an alligator out and the resources and everything that goes in. And even the people that are showing up, it's all kitsch.
Yeah, Alligator Bob.
Yeah, Alligator Bob. Everything is kitsch. And even to the point, as we were just saying, about the Twitter feeds. I mean, you'll have a Twitter feed for the alligator, and everybody's going crazy and jokes and this, that, and the other. And, we're kind of used to that now. I just mentioned the bobcat. But I don't know, seeing that video last night and a beautiful summer night and a band showing up to take advantage of a group of people together, the people are dancing, and they're having a community celebration around this unwinning hero that is the alligator that is in this lagoon, not going anywhere right now. And it seems to be bringing out humanity, if you will, through this reptile.
I think the gator is loving it. He's got to be.
He's dancing the salsa.
I think he's throwing out the first pitch at Wrigley tomorrow. He's going to be a taste over the weekend. Yeah.
It's all fun and games until somebody loses an arm.
Now, okay. Well, I had to go there.
Right. That'll happen next. But right now, we celebrate the alligator and community. And the alligator and the salsa band, most valuable people on the planet, maybe? That's the best bet.
I don't think the gator qualifies.
Yeah, not yet.
Yeah, he should be the MVP.
Yeah, right? I feel like he already probably has been.
MVP J...
A?
MVGP.
Persons of the Lagoon.
Yeah, MVGP, right.
Yes.
There it is. All right, we'll take a break here. We'll come back and we'll get to your headlines here on 720 WGN.
Live from the Allstate Skyline Studio.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
On 720 WGN.
Steve Cochran Show, Justin Kaufman in for Steve today. Dave Bennett, Steve Brzanich, Mary Vanderbilt here. We've got your riding shotgun with you on your commute to work this morning or getting ready for work, whatever it is. Gary Chico is here. We'll talk with Gary Chico, of course, mayoral candidate, who has now got a new job, Lisk. We'll talk with him about that. as well as other things. Gary, good to see you. Thanks for being here.
Justin, thank you for having me, and good to be with one of my favorite sports guys, Dave.
Oh, you're very kind.
The Chicago team's a little better in the All-Star game, but we were happy to be there.
Absolutely.
Well, let's start. I want to talk about this because we could talk all about neighborhood investments. It's a big issue. I guess the first question I have is, what do you do? What's the emotion like when you lose an election? When you're running for mayor and it's over?
Yeah.
What do you do? Is there a period of mourning? I asked Dave. He said it was hours when he lost treasurer back in high school. But as mayoral, what happens right after you lose?
Look, obviously nobody likes to lose, right? I mean, you get in this to win it. And what happens is, as you're in the middle of a campaign, you're running at a pace that you've never experienced before. It's morning through night. It's intensity every hour. There's no letdown. So you're really running at breakneck speed. And then the night of the election, you don't win, and it, boom, goes to zero. So you have to make that adjustment, right? I did it. I love this city, so I stay involved in lots of different ways. And just because you don't win an election doesn't mean you stop being a citizen. Mm-hmm. And you have to find other ways to help out and be a good part of your city. That's what I've been doing.
I've heard from other candidates that it can be addictive, the sort of everyday, the grind, everything that goes into running a candidacy. Do you see it that way, or is it more like, oh my gosh, this is a ton of work?
Well, I more look at it as a episodic thing. Running a campaign, given the number of people you have to touch, the mastery of the issues you have to have, that's an intensity unlike you've ever experienced before. Whether I would call it an addiction, I'm not so sure. But it is certainly unlike anything, unless, Justin, you've run for office before.
I have not.
It's unlike anything you've ever done. But it's also very, very invigorating. You get to meet a lot of people. There's great people in this city. And that is a real high.
Well, let's try that addiction theory. Are you looking to run for office again?
Oh, you never say never. I've never looked at a race that I've taken on without saying to myself, could I do a good job in that office? Could I make things better? Could I serve the people better? And that's the litmus test I use. And so that's how I look at these things. I'm not one of those lifers that has to be in a dog assistant dog catcher, regional dog catcher, state dog catcher. I don't. That's just not my style. I'm not saying it's bad.
Right.
I mean, a lot of people have done it, been very successful.
Right.
But for me personally, I look at it more like I said, is this a job that I think I can do well at and contribute to the public?
Gary Chico, our guest. Okay, so let's talk about LISC. This is an organization that's been around for 40 years. You invest in neighborhoods. You take an opportunity to give grants and other money and to development. Why'd you get involved in this organization?
Well, first of all, their executive director, Megan Hart, is a longtime friend of mine who I think is an outstanding. She was a public servant for many years and does a great job of running this organization. I felt that maybe working together with Megan, I could add to what they're already doing, working with a lot of neighborhood partners around the city to make neighborhoods better by investing in them. First of all, planning is one of their strongest suits. They work together with these community organizations that have been in neighborhoods for decades and figure out via plan what's the best thing to do here. Where are we heading? What's our goal? Where are we trying to come out? And after that, it's an implementation phase. And so they've done this in many neighborhoods throughout the city. I was really intrigued because when I was running for office, I heard about all these ideas about bringing neighborhoods back. And then I started to look at the LISC quality of life plans, and I would wave them around at these forums and debates and say, wait, we don't have to reinvent the wheel here in Auburn Gresham. We don't have to reinvent the wheel here in Austin. These are wonderful documents that have been worked on over long hours by LISC and community partners. We have the plan here. Let's go to implementation.
It almost becomes, I would think, there's a lot of, I don't say blissful ignorance, but especially when it's campaign time, where people say, the neighborhoods aren't getting enough, or nobody cares about the neighborhoods, it's just about downtown. But when you talk about organizations like LISC, and like you're talking about where you see in Auburn Gresham or in Austin, that there are plans and there are community organizations that have been doing things that kind of fly under the radar.
Yeah.
There is a lot of effort that's being put towards developing neighborhoods.
Well, one of the reasons I'm doing this show and some other shows over the recent weeks is to point out the fact that a lot of people have been doing hard work at trying to plan for their neighborhoods. And now we have to shine the light even more brightly on the need for resources to implement those things. I know that Mayor Lightfoot and her administration cares deeply about this, so hopefully we can use the resources that we have, maybe couple them next to what the city has. We have a lot of banking partners mm-hmm. that we work with. We now have federal opportunity zone legislation that'll bring even more capital to these neighborhoods. But, you know, look, rhetoric's great. I love it. I'm as good as anybody with it in a campaign. But we have to take it down a notch and go from the rhetoric to the implementation. Let's not just talk about the need for a grocery mm-hmm. store. Let's build one. Let's build more than the couple we've talked about. And that, I think we can do that.
Okay, so what do Chicago neighborhoods need? I mean, we talk about grocery stores, just mentioned, because that mm-hmm. is a big issue when you come to the deserts, the food deserts. Schools, of course, and sure. safety. And we hear over and over about crime and yep. gun violence, that seems to be the one issue that no matter how many resources are thrown at that problem, mm-hmm. it's not being fixed.
Well, it has a lot of dimensions. Let's talk about violence for a minute. LISC is not out of that issue either. We do a lot of sports and recreation programming like Hoops in the Hood in neighborhoods throughout Chicago. And we go to the toughest spots in the street, set up our baskets, and start playing. And from that, we culminate a tournament in August in Grant Park here to determine the champion. But you'd be surprised at the hundreds and hundreds of kids that are playing basketball and keeping them positively focused. But when you talk about violence and all of its dimensions, clearly there's a lot that can be done. And put the policing on the side mm-hmm. for a minute. Obviously, you need yeah. that because some of these people who are perpetrating the shootings, you're not going to save them with a basketball, right? So you have to deal with that so we keep other people safe. But do we need to have businesses on commercial thoroughfares that stay open at night with the lights on? Do we need to have goods and services available conveniently to people that live in, let's just take Auburn, Gresham, and Austin because we have two great plans there. Do we need to have businesses there where people can conveniently get things? Do we need to have businesses where somebody can get a job, a summer job? A young kid, like opportunities I had working in a gas station when right. I was a kid. Those businesses start to shape you and mold you in a positive way. When those things aren't there, you drift off the track, you get into trouble. So one of the things that we want to do at LISC is look more at helping small businesses come to life according to these plans that we've put out for various neighborhoods in Chicago. Now, how do you do that? You just don't wish it. You have to have people who are entrepreneurs. You have to identify a pipeline of people who would like to do these kinds of businesses. We have to look at their financials. We have to look at their credit. We'll have to take some risk. Mm-hmm. Maybe make a low-interest loan, maybe even a grant, couple with a bank to help these people get started. But the idea that I would like to see implemented here is to get critical mass in some of these neighborhoods. Not a one-store operation and call it a day. That's not going to do it. You got to do a few blocks at a time. But here's the other side. You don't have such a grandiose objective where it's unattainable.
Right.
I'm not going to tell you we're going to do 10 miles in the next 4 months. But can we do a couple of blocks in a year and a half, 2 years? Yeah, I think that's attainable.
I always think about the south side of Chicago, and I think about Austin is a great example, and the west side of Chicago. But the fact that if you look at a neighborhood like Inglewood in the 50s and 60s, you mm-hmm. saw the largest shopping district outside of the Loop. Mm-hmm. You saw a thriving, you think of Bronzeville, you think of even Austin. I mean, you talk about. And now you look at it, and over time, we have seen the disintegration of those neighborhoods, mm-hmm. meaning those shops you talked about, goods and services, keeping the lights on.
Yeah.
Why do you think that happened?
Oh, I think for lots of reasons. I'd be lying if I didn't say that racism wasn't a part of it. Obviously activities like redlining, which LISC addresses quite a bit. I'm really happy about that. There's been a lot of practices in the past and a lot of behaviors of people that have led to those things. But, you know, I'm happy to tell you that if you look at certain neighborhoods go through cycles, right? If you look at the history of not only Chicago but the country, there has been episodes and cycling through of different periods of neighborhoods. Bronville's resurging right now, mm-hmm. thank God. Inglewood has a tremendous amount of investment taking place in it right now with a new school, New Inglewood High School on the horizon. Parks. I mean, all of these things work together to bring us back. And then you have to be careful that when you don't get this engine of economic and redevelopment going, you don't cause this gentrification cascade pushes everybody out.
Right.
So this is a balancing act. I like to see people working together, living together. I really enjoy seeing that. I think that ought to be our goal.
I had a great opportunity to talk with Reverend Brazier in Woodlawn not too long ago, a neighborhood just west of Hyde Park or right in that area.
Yeah.
And they're doing a lot of the same type of thing. They're thinking of Woodlawn in the future. They know that the Obama Center is coming soon, and the conversation is about how do you plan this? What do you want your neighborhood to look like in 10 years? For LISC and celebrating and investing in and developing these community organizations, how important is it for those organizations to take stock or take ownership of what they want their neighborhood to look like in 5, 10, 15 years?
They're the owners. They're the catalyst. They're the impetus. LISC is not the impetus. LISC is a partner, an assist to those very organizations that have had deep roots in neighborhoods for a long, long time. Byron Brazier, great guy. Even knew his dad before that, Art Brazier. What they have done there in building their church and its associated operations has been such a huge anchor. Now the idea is to tie that up with University of Chicago activity, Obama Center activity, and make something bigger out of it. But I think the people in the neighborhood have a very valid point. Don't just cause this rush of a development, and then people have been here for 30 years are now gone because the rent went from from 800 to 2,800. We can't have that. We got to be real careful. And I think people raise a lot of valid points about that. That's got to be addressed. So we want to see development catalyzed. We want to see things happening. I think it makes for health. We certainly need it in the tax base of our city. But more importantly than that, there's the human element. We need young kids who are walking, playing, riding their bikes in these neighborhoods to be able to stop and get an ice cream cone, right?
Right.
Last night, I was in Oak Park with my family. You know, they were getting a bite to eat. That's a great example of how things can work. All income levels, all races, people getting along, having a very nice time, stores, get an ice cream cone, get a coffee, get a dinner. This is what we want to see our neighborhoods looking like. Devon Avenue is one of my favorite examples. You want to see something go on? Go to Devon Avenue at 10:30 at night and watch it come alive.
Yeah, right.
For a couple-mile stretch, the lights are on, restaurants close. It's really exciting.
Gary Chico, our guest here on the Steve Cochran Show. We'll take a quick break. Stick around, and we'll come back and continue the conversation because, as you mentioned, taxes. Talk about a lot of sticker shock as many Chicagoans are getting their new tax bill this week. We'll talk more with Gary Chico here on the Steve Cochran Show. Stay with us.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
Coming up, the stories that matter with Steve Grzanich from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom here on WGN Radio. Gary Chico, my guest in studio, and Steve Cochran Show. I'm Justin Kaufman in for Steve today. We're talking about developing neighborhoods, and that's really what you're doing with your new post at LISC, LISC.org is the website. One of the issues has to be taxes, of course, and taxes in schools. These are issues that have both helped and hurt Chicago neighborhoods for years. You purchased CPS very famously here in Chicago, the takeover in 1995, you and Paul Vallis. The idea that the tax bill is going to go up, and you're seeing so many different neighborhoods on the north side and the central part of Chicago have sticker shock where there are 10-15% increases in their tax bill. A lot of people say, well, this is too much because I'm not seeing anything return. I'm not seeing a return. It's the same services that were provided yesterday that I have today. And now I have to make a decision what I want to do with my kids. I'm thinking about schools. Now it becomes an easier decision for some of these families to leave Chicago because the tax rate's the same as, say, the western suburbs or the northern suburbs. Sure. So how do you compete if you're the city of Chicago or a neighborhood to keep some of this tax base?
One of the things I've always tried to do is make sure that people felt they got value for their dollar. Whether it was my time at Chicago Public Schools, where we created a lot of different school programs for people, whether it was the International Baccalaureate program in your school, whether it was a new Skinner School, whether it was a new Northside, Jones, Walter Payton, Gwendolyn Brooks. Why? You have to listen to people. You can't govern tone deaf. And people said to us, we want high-quality schools for our kids. Now, I am totally with the neighborhood school concept. I mean, you live in a neighborhood. I live in a neighborhood. Your kids, my kids, should be able to walk to that school, no matter what it is. I don't care if it's Whitney Young or Lane Tech. You should be able to walk there if you're a resident. You get some preference because this is the idea behind a neighborhood school. We need to get back to that. You need to have some comfort. that you're going to be able to get your child into a school that you're comfortable with, that they're going to be educated well in, and you won't feel so bad about that tax bill. Now, taxes going up, there's an inevitability to some of this, right?
Right.
But if you feel that you can go to your neighborhood park and it's well-maintained and there's some programming, if you feel that you see a police car ride by every now and then, you get to know the officer, if you feel that your children can go to school, and even if you don't have children in school, but at the end of your block, a couple of blocks down, is an elementary or a high school that's well-maintained and doing a good job, you feel okay about, look, it's taxes, we're citizens. You have to contribute to paying for the government. And so, but you have to feel you got value for it. And once we lose that equation, mm-hmm. it's a bad spot.
Well, we saw during the Emanuel administration, the largest school closings in history, and most of those were neighborhood schools.
Yeah.
How do you develop a neighborhood if you do not have a school as an anchor?
I think a school is a critical part of any neighborhood redevelopment initiative. We at LISC, and whether I was in the government or not, always looked at schools as a part of the program, just like we talked about a little bit earlier about Englewood. I have seen what school. Look at Skinner in the West Loop, okay? I worked a lot with those folks, and they do a fabulous job. But if you don't have Skinner in the West Loop, then what's the balance there? Where do the people go to school? Do you have to get on a bus? Do you have to get in a car and drive miles? That doesn't work.
Right.
So we need to have good, functioning schools that the citizens in that community feel some confidence in. So schools are a critical part. Parks are a critical part. One of the first encounters that a young parent with a child will have is going to the park, whether it's pushing your child in the swing or going to an organized program like tumbling. I mean, so we have to make sure this works a lot earlier than school age. And then you have to see what I want to have in this city, I think a lot of people want to have, is universal pre-K. Long before you'll ever have the trauma of worrying about what high school your child's going to go to, you have the trauma of where do I put my little young child, mm-hmm. you know, for the first bit of schooling. We should have that so conveniently available to people throughout this city. It's something I've always worked on, even when I was state school board chairman. We put money in that program to make that, to come a little bit closer to that ideal. To me, that's a good functioning city. You want to see a healthy neighborhood? What I hope to also bring to LISC in the repertoire is good early childhood programming.
There is so much we can talk about. One, obviously, you know, Pete Buttigieg today, the mayor in South Bend, he put out a new program about racial inequity. Mm-hmm. And when you think of racial inequity, you have to think of Chicago, segregation, one of the most segregated cities in America.
Yeah.
When you think about some of these neighborhoods, and we can have all the conversations we want about Skinner and the north side of Chicago, but when you're talking about developing neighborhoods, race has to play a huge role. How do you handle developing a neighborhood when there still are racial inequities?
I think you have to go about it by dealing with some of the obvious problems. I mean, we've looked at racism and lending, right, over the years. I mean, Congress has even stepped in to legislate there. The Community Reinvestment Act requires banks to put money into areas that are not their sweet spot, so to speak. I think you have to do those institutional things, and I think we also have to set some ideals and some goals for ourselves that people have to be able to live together. I mean, we have to talk about it. We have to live it. We can't just, you know. I live downtown. In my building, we have every race, ethnicity, age you can think of. This is the way it's got to be. It's mm-hmm. got to be this way in all neighborhoods in Chicago. This is why, look, I'm worried about gentrification in a lot of neighborhoods. But if we can come to a balance where we have people with this income and people with lesser income, elderly, young people, parents, this is going to be our ideal. And this is what we have to strive for. So you have to talk about it, and you have to live it.
There you go. Gary Chico just recently announced that he's joining LISC.org, LISC, which is a group that helps with community organizations and neighborhoods when it comes to investment and development. Gary Chico, great to see you. Thanks for coming in studio.
Thank you,
Justin. And continue the good work, and we will talk soon.
Live from the Allstate Skyline Studio,
this is the Steve Cochran Show
on 720 WGN.
Yes, it's time for some entertainment news. Steve Cochran Show. Justin Kaufman in for Steve today here on WGN Radio. Of course, Dean, usually sponsored by Ravinia. This is interesting because we have a pair of lawn tickets to Ravinia to give away July 21st to see Ghostbusters. celebrating its 35th anniversary. Score performed live by the Chicago Symphony Orchestra. Dean will be leading the pre-concert discussion. It seems like something you'd be down for.
Well, actually, I was there last night.
Hey! Well, we might have to do an entertainment report on that. 312-981-7200. One pair of lawn tickets right now. Caller number 7. How about that? Does that sound good?
Sounds great.
What were you there for last night?
Lady Antebellum.
Oh!
Great concert. Great concert.
Is Lady Antebellum the are they the group that does a lot of acapella type stuff, like the four of them? There's like three or four of them?
Not acapella. They do acoustic stuff.
Acoustic.
Three of them.
Three of them. That was close.
And no, they were terrific. And actually, and tomorrow night they're doing the West Side Story with the CSO, and I am going to that.
Wow! And Grant Park Symphony Orchestra last night did The Wizard of Oz. That's the new thing. Everybody's just putting it up there.
Is. Yeah.
And we got to start thinking. I can't wait till it gets to the next tier of movies, mm-hmm. when maybe the movies are not as good. You know, when they're doing like I don't know, Turner and Hooch, or they're doing. You know, maybe the Fast and the Furious movies.
Somehow I don't see the Chicago Symphony Orchestra doing this score for Fast and Furious.
Well, we'll see. You know, some good songs. Maybe. I don't know. Some good rap rock in there. We'll figure it out. Josh Hill's here. He is the editorial director at fansided.com. He's in for Dean Richards today. Dean is in L.A. interviewing the cast of Lion King, and he'll be back for the block party tomorrow. Josh, good to see you.
Yeah, good to be here.
All right, so let's get right into the entertainment report. As we mentioned, Lion King, this is the big weekend. They're going to save the summer. This is going to be the biggest movie since Endgame?
Well, I hope so. Came on here a couple of weeks ago and talked about how it was this, one of the worst summer movies that I've seen in a very long time. But The Lion King, that's going to be what I think saves not just the summer for movies, but kind of the summer in pop culture. We haven't had an event, a capital E event, a pop culture phenomenon yet. I thought maybe Us was going to be that. Obviously we had Avengers, but I mean, that's a superhero movie, so that's to be expected. Right. But you got Beyonce behind this. You've got Childish Gambino, Donald Glover in it. And it's The Lion King. It's Disney. So they're throwing a lot of money behind this. Beyonce is behind the album, which Elton John was for the original. So I really think this is going to be a moment.
It's a live action remake, I guess. Live action is the right word to use. Is it the same? It's the same movie. So do we know if it's any good? Is it getting reviews yet? Are we at the point where we can assess whether or not this Lion King remake is worth it?
Well, so far it feels like this is a technical feat. So a lot in the line of Jurassic Park back in the day, where this is a game changer for CGI, for the technical side of things. Right. And then it's also a marvel because it's Disney. It's nostalgia. We're tapping into something that you already have a built-in audience for. You've got people who saw the original animated classic back in the 90s, and now an entire new generation who are going to be introduced to this either because Beyonce's in it or because their parents, their uncles, your older friends are going to go be taking them to this movie, which is why I really think this is going to be a moment. There's going to be so many ways to consume The Lion King, and we haven't had that yet in either movies or pop culture yet this summer. It feels really weird to be this
far. I haven't paid much attention to The Lion King. I've seen all the posters and some of the controversy over they would put, like, Childish Gambino's name, and then there'd be the lion cub, and you're like, okay, that's not him, that's a lion. But is the CGI, are they making the lions talk, or is it gonna be more like Babe, where it's the pig talks but he doesn't talk?
Babe, the real throwback. If we're talking about reboots that we need, I need the Babe reboot, the gritty take on Babe.
Babe was the best. I love Babe.
The pig doesn't talk. It talks, but it doesn't like move its mouth. And I was wondering if they're going to do the Mr. Ed peanut butter in the mouth thing for these lions.
No, the lions talk. So. All right. And it's a star-studded cast, too. Like, Seth Rogen is in this.
John Oliver
is in it. So the lions talk. They've done this before, Disney has. They did it with Beauty and the Beast. They just released the Mulan trailer, which is actually a bit of a left turn from all of these classic remakes, where it's basically a shot-for-shot live-action remake. Mulan is more of going to be a war movie, it seems. But The Lion King is going to stick with the golden era of Disney, where it's going to be a faithful adaptation. And then my question off of that is this finally our first real Oscar contender of the season? Because we haven't had one of those yet either. A technical feat, like I said, it's Disney, so they're going to throw a ton of money behind it to try and get it nominated for both the technical side of things and a Best Picture. Who knows? a voice actor for best actress, best actor. Mm. That's never really happened before. So,
and Beyonce's all over the soundtrack, so I'm assuming it's going to be best song as well.
Yeah, she's going to be performing at the Oscars. I mean, this is perfect because the Oscars last year with Bohemian Rhapsody, they wanted to draw in an audience. They want to get younger. They want to get more relevant. And having Queen literally lead the show off and win Best Picture, that really helped with the conversation with not just cinephiles, but people who just go to the movies and want to have a good time. The Lion King has a lot of that going on, too, where it's going to be the songs and everything.
The weekend will have all sorts of films. And I think about the summer, because summer rarely gets represented when it comes to the Oscars. You'll get these big summer movies. But we're seeing some indie films that are grabbing attention. I think of Lulu Wang's The Farewell. Mm. Well, Awkwafina is the lead in that. That comes out this weekend. That's an indie art film that is getting a lot of buzz. A film I saw that I loved, Last Black Man in San Francisco.
Oh, yeah.
Another film that could get some Oscar buzz. So it does feel like there are at least some independent films that might be getting some Oscar buzz early.
Yeah, and it feels kind of like 96, 97, where you had really the culmination of the early 90s Sundance phenomenon, where you had all of these young independent filmmakers coming up and making it to the mainstream, and all of a sudden the Coen brothers smashed through and Fargo's a thing. And you have all of these smaller movies. And that was 96, I believe, because Titanic was 97. 96 was a similarly down year where we didn't have that runaway film where we're just like, this is it. This is the big, huge blockbuster where everybody's going to get behind it. And so I agree. Last Black Man in San Francisco, really good movie. The Farewell, also fantastic. So there's silver lining here if we don't get a big pop culture movie nominated for Best Picture or in the Oscar running to keep that conversation relevant, there's at least going to be good films to pick from. Yeah. I just don't know how many people are going to be talking about The Farewell come December. You know? Yeah. You can't just walk up to somebody on the street and say, hey, did you see The Last Black Man in San Francisco?
Is that what you're doing? You're just walking down Michigan Avenue? Hey, excuse me, I'm one of the strangers. Did you see Last Black Man in San Francisco? All right, well, Josh Hill's here. We're talking entertainment. We'll take a quick break and come back and continue. We got to talk about Jason Momoa's figure. Mm-hmm. That's a big story. And the ESPYs, which were last night.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
Six-three-zero's got a great one, Joe. You like this? Steve Cochran Show here. Just like Robin Williams is my genie, Jonathan Taylor Thomas is my Simba.
That's right.
Hashtag not my Lion King.
Do you think the Gator is going to make a cameo?
Yeah, it should. Maybe it's not only a promotion for Crawl, the alligator movie coming out, but also maybe
for
there's
Lion King.
A Lion King.
I mean, that would make sense.
It would.
They could CG him in, too.
Josh Hill is here. He's the editorial director at fansided.com. We're talking entertainment. Dean Richards is off today. This segment sponsored by Ravinia. All right, so before we go, this is the week of the Comic-Con. Mm-hmm. San Diego Comic-Con starts, which is the big... It's going to be interesting. The next week will be for all the pop culture needs, for superheroes, for Star Wars, all that kind of stuff. There's going to be a lot of news. Usually comes out because they save this stuff and reveal it at the Comic-Con.
Yeah, so... It's always been the mecca, for a lack of a better term, the nerd mecca, which is not such a dirty word as it was maybe 10, 15 years ago. But Marvel, kind of like what we were talking about with The Lion King, it is a tentpole event. It is a franchise. That is why we go to the movies. In this whole conversation about golden television and, oh, I can just sit at home and watch Netflix, I'll binge Stranger Things this weekend and not have to leave, you want to draw people out. And Marvel has really found a way to do that. So if you want to see... You don't want Endgame spoiled for you. You have to see it on Thursday, Friday, right. Saturday before you go into work. Now, my question with that is, what is the future of Marvel? We're hopefully going to find out more about that at Comic-Con.
Right.
Because now we're going into uncharted territory. We've wrapped up Iron Man, Captain America, not sure what's going on with Thor, and now we're going to be testing new characters, new franchises, new tentpoles. That's why Spider-Man was such an interesting release, because that's the next legacy holdover from, oh, I remember that character, I can follow them into this new generation. But now we're going to get, like, The Eternals is a movie that's going to be coming. I think Angelina Jolie is attached to be in that. And now we're also going to be branching out into more representation. Mm. I believe that they're going into some Asian comic characters that we haven't seen before. So now that Marvel has a foothold it's going to be interesting to see what they do to not only hold that, but to then expand it and say, all right, what can we do to build upon this? Because if they rerun the same thing that we just saw for the last 10 years, we just build towards something. We don't add anything new. I mean, people are still going to go see the movies, but we saw with DC, you can displease a large portion of your fan base if you don't do it right.
Like everybody, I grew up a DC fan, and Marvel wasn't really a thing when I was a kid. You know, Batman, Superman, that kind of stuff. They took the summer off. Shazam was a lucky hit at the beginning of the summer, but they haven't been around. But they're going to have some big hits coming up here, possibly with the Joker movie, which is again another storyline. But this is what is it? What's his name? Joaquin Phoenix.
Yeah, Joaquin Phoenix is in.
Joaquin Phoenix is the big star of that. That's interesting. And then you got Wonder Woman next year. So it seems like DC Comics has a chance to sort of grab some of that real estate back.
Yeah, and you would hope so, because that was kind of the excitement of, oh, we're going to have this great comic book war. We're going to have Marvel has already established themselves, like 2008. But that's right, 2008, Iron Man, everybody's nostalgic about that. We forget that that's when The Dark Knight came out, the Christopher Nolan, Heath Ledger film, which didn't really fit into the grander plan of DC because they didn't have one at the time. But the DC Marvel thing has been a thing for the last 10, 11 years. But DC's never really showed up to the party. It's always been Marvel. So the Joker's going to be interesting. Enlisting Joaquin Phoenix, you got an Oscar-nominated talent behind there. Todd Phillips is directing it. The guy did The Hangover.
Wow.
So you're getting a weird, comedic, dark mix going on there. It's supposed to be a standalone film. I don't know if it's going to fit into the larger picture of what they have going on. But if it's a success, they're going to build around it.
What a great idea, though, to do an origin story film for Joker.
Yeah. He's one of, if not the greatest comic book villain of all time. He's up there with Darth Vader. As you think of pop culture villains, you're like, oh, yeah, the Joker, this guy who's been around for years and years and years and decades. And to give him an origin story and to just focus on him is fascinating. And it's also the fascination of focusing on the anti-hero. He's the hero of the movie. There's no Batman. There's no good guy in the movie. We have to follow the Joker. So it's going to be real fascinating to see. And hopefully this is a pivot for DC away from trying to copy the Marvel blueprint of this is what you do, and carving out their own thing. So that's the real excitement there. And it's very artistic. So we've got a convergence of two talents you didn't think were going to come together. Joaquin Phoenix, the method actor, who I bet he was real fun to be on set with while he's going deep into character as the Joker.
Right. That's
and then
the
Todd Phillips, who's, you know, he's directed blockbusters.
Well,
before.
A good transition to some pop culture news. Jason Momoa is getting the treatment that I think a lot of women always get, celebrity women, when they're at the beach or and boats try to take pictures of them in bikinis for the tabloids. He's getting a little bit of that. He's out in at the poolside, and he doesn't look as Aquaman-ish as he once did. In a strange way, he's being fat-shamed.
Yeah, he is. I mean, it's for being slightly less buff than he already was, which if Jason Momoa is fat, I'm never taking my shirt off ever again. Like, not even in the shower. Like, this is, I can't do it. Like, to your point, we deal with this all the time on the internet. It's like, come on. He's Jason Momoa. A, he's one of the most popular, well-liked people in the entire sphere of pop culture. He's likable every single time he's on the red carpet. He hasn't done anything wrong. He's one of the good guys. And then the fat shame him for that? Like, why? Like, he's still incredibly buff.
Yeah.
Because he's not rippled? Like, I don't know. But it was an instance where the internet did kind of rally back around him and say, this is wrong. And it did open up an opportunity for a lot of people to say, this has happened to me too, and it didn't make me feel good, and I'm in no position to be judged like Jason Momoa is. So it was kind of a segue into a conversation I think that needed to happen, but it's also social media, so these things kind of, they're like tears
they
in the rain,
go, right?
they get lost. So,
Josh, let's quickly finish on the ESPYs for last night. They put the ESPYs on the one day that no major sports is happening. This is a, I don't know, this kind of feels like a manufactured award show. It's obviously something that has been successful, but didn't go as well last night as it has in the past.
No, it's absolutely manufactured. I mean, like, we already know who the best teams are. We don't need to re-award them. It was cool seeing, like, the U.S. Women's National Team. They were in the parade in New York in the morning, and all of a sudden they're showing up at the ESPYs, and you're trying to determine which ones are still drunk still, and which was a fun little game to play. But that was really the highlight, because there's nothing else going on. The ESPYs have long been this kind of just, like, it's a manufactured thing. Tracy Morgan bombed his opening monologue, which was unfortunate. And another case where, I mean, the man almost died 5 years ago. We almost lost Tracy Morgan. And 5 years later, everybody's killing him because he can't tell funny jokes about sports. And Drake, Justin Timberlake, you got Peyton Manning, the old Norm MacDonald from 1998, the classic, although that's kind of his style, is to go up and bomb and be, you know,
right.
to keep it going so long it turns into be funny.
But still being talked about, so that's the thing. Did you watch, Dave?
I did not watch.
Oh, yeah, you were at Lady Antebellum.
I was at Ravinia. I probably would have turned it on for a minute. I mean, to me, this is just something that was created to fill the day after the All-Star break when there's not much sports going on. And, because ESPN says we're supposed to care about it, I guess we're supposed to care about it.
Right. Well, I will say this. Megan Rapinoe is becoming one of my favorite athletes of all time. Yeah. And, you know, obviously she's politically outspoken, and it's not really about her politics. It's just about the fact that the way she is celebrating and using her fame right now to casually inject herself into everything American, it's kind of amazing. She is at that rally yesterday, at that parade afterwards. That sort of on the podium, she's out there dancing, she's kind of gyrating around.
And how many people you think are gonna have purple hair in a week?
I thought about it. I was like, hey, I gotta I want that kind of energy in my life. I need that. Yeah. This is how I gotta live my life now.
Very good. It's fun to watch them celebrate the unbelievable achievement. Josh Hill, editorial director over at fansided.com, in for Dean today. Josh, thanks for coming in and talking about pop culture.
Yeah, happy to be here.
Live from the Allstate Skyline Studio.
This is the Steve Cochran Show
on 720 WGN.
Motoring along here on the Steve Cochran Show. Justin Kaufman in for Steve today. Dave Ennett, Mary Vandeveld, Steve Grzanich. The whole team is here. We'll also be out at the big block party tomorrow morning in Naperville.
It's going to be great.
How about it? We get to do radio play-by-play for a parade.
Yeah.
First time in history.
And there's also, I don't know if it's the first time.
I'm like, what a great concept. I'm like, well, it's probably a very awkward concept. There's a float. It's got wheels. How can I explain this to you? It's a little bit of red, a little bit of blue.
Well, we'll be on CLTV, won't we, later?
Yeah, I guess you're right.
Maybe. Yeah.
No, but I think they'll show the parade. Will they take our play-by-play of it?
On WGN TV?
On CLTV.
Or CLTV?
Yeah. That's a question.
I don't know.
Yeah.
That's good.
Well, we have Dave Ennett. You know,
this is what I was thinking. This is what I like. Maybe we'll go, Dave does play-by-play. The rest of us, maybe we can split it up. I can do color commentary. I can be the Fred Willard from Best in Show. Mm-hmm. I can do that part. And then, Mary, maybe you could be the one who goes down and...
Like the Vanna White, something.
No, you put the mic on, like we go to the... You interview it while the...
You're like the sideline reporter.
Sure, the sideline reporter. Yeah. The Aaron Andrews.
One thing that Cochran was talking about yesterday, I don't know if you heard this, he was suggesting that you go in the dunk tank. They're going to have a dunk tank there, and then we do play-by-play
classic.
Of that.
I could do a dunk
tank. Isn't that what he said, Mary?
For sure. Yeah.
Hey, it's going to be hot tomorrow, so I'm okay with the dunk
tank. Okay, good.
Yeah, so good, good. Betsy Ziegler's here. She's the CEO at 1871, the great tech incubator. Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing great.
Good to see you. It's been a while since you've been on, but we've been kind of... I think I've been teasing it out to say, is Chicago still a tech town? That's kind of how I've been promoting it this morning. And I think it's a legitimate question, because obviously we've had a tremendous amount of tech industry come to Chicago. This week alone, Accenture talking about bringing more jobs to Chicago. But now this has become the hot thing. New York City, Los Angeles, of course, Silicon Valley. Do you still consider Chicago to be the tech town in the United States of America?
I think 100%. I mean, if you think about our momentum, now I don't think we're the only tech town, of course, but if you just dial the clock back just a couple of years ago, tech was about 2% of the Chicago economy, and now it's about 10%.
Wow.
And as you know, we are a very diverse economy, so there's no sector that has more than 13% or so. So we're actually, we're scaling really fast.
That's unbelievable.
We have a lot of work to do, don't get me wrong, but we have, we're the number one place for investor returns in tech across every city. We have the highest percentage of female founders by a huge margin across every city. So, we've got tons going for us, lots of momentum, but still, quite a bit more to do.
Is it harder or what are the challenges that go with growing at that rate? Because it, at one point, you know, it was kind of this idea that it was a fun cottage industry, and Chicago was dipping its toe in, and you had the, before he was governor, J.B. Pritzker involved in 1871, and of course the mayor, Emanuel.
Yep.
But now you're at a point where Chicago relies on this as more and more of, you know, you see the percentages of the economy. It becomes less about the little engine that could and more about, you know, being part of the mainstream.
Yeah, for sure. So I think I have a couple of thoughts on this. First is the role the tech is going to play to accelerate new business growth is going to be tremendous. It's probably going to be the number one driver. And right now in the country, roughly the same number of companies die every month that are born. And so we need so if your new business engine is broken, your job creation engine is also broken. And that's a problem, particularly as we think about equity across the city of Chicago. And so we can talk now or later about some of the stuff that 1871 is doing to try to bridge that. But so that's one thing. I think there's going to be an ongoing piece around talent. We have tremendous talent in Chicago and in the state of Illinois, given our university system. And then the density of big Fortune 500 companies that are here that are helping customers to these, to the companies here. So we've got a platform that we can amplify and grow, but we've got to keep our foot on the pedal.
You know, I'll ask about talent.
Yeah.
Because this is something that we've talked about before. And I think about I want to make a sort of a parallel to the restaurant industry.
Sure.
The restaurant industry in Chicago has seen explosive growth and prominence from, went from a meat and potatoes town to a James Beard town where now the best restaurants in the whole world are in Chicago.
Right.
But they found themselves in a position where the actual cooks in the kitchen, there was a shortage. Mm-hmm. It was hard to find because they were jumping from restaurant to restaurant, that because it became so prominent, you had so many people with so many choices. Mm-hmm. I would think the tech industry would have similar issues when you have so much growth here. People can jump from one company to another and they can find jobs here and move around. So how do you make sure that companies and the city maintains its talent level and continues to bring in the best and brightest to
Chicago? Yeah, it's really interesting point, because I think if you look at what's happening in Silicon Valley right now, that's clearly what happens, right? It's very fluid. People can move around. I think if you look at junior talent, I'm not so worried about it because we have such an inflow of junior talent coming out of the universities. We're the second highest producer of computer software engineers anywhere, that there's so much talent here at the junior level. Mm-hmm. I think for me, it's, we're not yet at the tipping point where there's that much movement. And that's actually a constraint for us, because on recruiting senior talent in from the coast, if they come here and there aren't enough others like jobs that they could go to, if that job doesn't work out, it's a detractor, right? So they're choosing not to come here. So I think our hope is to build that mesh network to a point where it can sort of sustain itself, but not tip over all the way to where what we're seeing in Silicon Valley, because that hurts the companies for sure.
You don't even think about those things, too, because, you know, you think, especially as you hear headlines, you know, they're bringing 600 jobs to Chicago or people are relocating here. You're like, oh, that's great. That's great for the economy. I have a friend who runs a municipality's website, meaning he's director of IT of one of the towns.
Sure.
He tells me he can't get anybody to come do that job because now the competition is so fierce here in Chicago because of private sector and other places.
Right.
They can find more money elsewhere. That for the first time ever, jobs are open and nobody wants them.
Yeah, I think what'll be interesting is how far, you know, there's an emerging theme around being location independent, particularly for tech jobs, because there's tech talent, there's a density here, but it's also spread across the Midwest or across the country that you could tap into. So for a lot of these companies in the race, the war for talent, for tech talent, they are creating opportunities to tap into people that live, you know, anywhere, but can do the job and be remote in.
Betsy Ziegler's here. She's the CEO over at 1871. When we come back, we'll take a quick break. We come back, I want to talk about some of the stuff that's happening in 1871.
Sure.
One of the best tech incubators in the entire country, not the world, but we'll talk about some of the businesses that are coming out of there.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
WGN Morning News throwing its fourth annual block party tomorrow in downtown Naperville, and we're going to be there along for the ride. Go to WGNradio.com/events for details. Coming up, the stories that matter with Steve Grzanich from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. Betsy Ziegler's here. She's the CEO of 1871, the tech incubator in town. You know, last time I had you and Howard Tolman in, and we were talking about just the idea of, you know, the tech incubators. There's a lot of startups. They come in. Mm-hmm. Some succeed, some fail. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that you can almost take the temperature of where we're at with the tech industry to see how many businesses that come out of 1871 yep. succeed.
Yep.
You have the numbers on that. How has it changed in over a year's time?
Yep. So we just celebrated our 7th birthday in May. And if you look at what's happening at 1871 right now, we have about 450 companies incubating there right now. But if you look at what has happened over the last 7 years, we've had 1,200 tech companies come wow. through there. And these are actual startups versus sort of individual contributors that are building websites or you know, as an individual developer. Of those 1,200, just under 700 are still alive. So it's about a 58-59% success rate, which is extremely high relative to the norm.
Wow.
And we measure our impact on that, the probability of success, but also how many jobs have been created. And just over 11,500 jobs have been created in the city of Chicago from those companies. And if you just take an average salary of, you know, $60,000-$65,000, that's about $760 million of salary that's coming into the city of Chicago that hopefully is driving lots of economic activity.
Putting your hat on from yeah. what you did before 1871, yeah. when you were at Kellogg, when yeah. you see that kind of success or you see those kind of numbers, yeah. that's got to be startling for any business community.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's phenomenal. It's worthy of celebration. It's worthy of trying to figure out exactly what's working. You know, what is it? Obviously, we have phenomenal founders, but what is the other part of the experience that's actually working? So we're trying to right. really kind of piece that.
Does it change the way on which kind of businesses that 1871 wants to support? Do you think about that when you look at the success rate and who's succeeding and who's not?
You know, it's interesting. We haven't yet, and I don't expect that we will use that as a criteria for selection of who gets in. Because we're, as a nonprofit, our job is to create opportunity and access for people solving all kinds of problems. Now, if you're building a physical product, you should go to MHUB. If you're doing something in life sciences, you should go to Matter. So there are those kinds mm-hmm. of boundaries. But beyond that, regardless of what problem you're trying to solve digitally, we are a good home for you. Now, having said that, from a data analytic perspective, I would love to know, you know, what are the conditions by right. which that are driving more success than not? And we're not there yet in our analysis, but that's what we're working on to try to answer that question, because it'll help us help founders, you know, more and maybe shorten the distance to success than what they currently have.
From your perch as CEO, do you see a kind of style of business or a service that's being provided at 1871 with the new crop of incubators that you hadn't seen before, or that there's more impetus on solving problems that were created more contemporary than the past? I mean, what are we seeing at 1871?
You know, I think, again, when you have 450 companies under one roof, it's hard to sort of draw a line in between all of them. We're seeing some more density being built in a couple of areas. One is on AR/VR, augmented reality and virtual reality, so that there's more density on that. There's more density on things involving artificial intelligence and advanced analytics. Food is all the rage right now in Chicago, and we have run an accelerator in partnership with Gordon Food Services on food, and with Family Farmed on food. Sports is becoming a bigger theme, and so I think most of the problems that those are solving are long-standing pain points versus they've cropped up as a result right, of something right. else, and people are.
I feel like at a certain point there will be disruptors and incubators or incubated smart startups that are solving some of the problems from the first wave of incubators and startups,
true.
Right?
Yeah.
For you, a lot is to you hang your hat on the successes of the companies that have yeah. come before. So, as the 1871 alumni, are they doing well? I mean, as you mentioned, 700 are still working, but yeah. I mean, you can look to success stories that
sure.
come out of there.
Yeah, of the 700, they've raised $1.4 billion or so in capital, which for me is a signal that the market thinks these companies are really tremendous. I'll pick out a handful just to mention. Cameo had an announcement last week that they raised their Series B another $50 million, and they raised their Series A just in November. So 6 months ago, they raised their Series A. Roll the clock forward half a year, and they raised another $50 million. So they are
wow.
a rocket ship. Four Kites is another one in the logistics space. They've raised, you know, well over $50 million. Spot Hero has raised over $50 million. And again, it's not so much about the dollars raised, but it's a proxy for the expectation of growth for those companies.
You guys got your big fundraising event coming up this summer. Momentum, it's called. It's a big part of how you guys raise money to be able to do this kind of thing.
That's right.
What can we expect from it?
Yeah, sure. So it's on September 19th. And 1871 exists to inspire, equip, and support founders to build extraordinary businesses. And to do that, we need help from lots of people, which is why we put on this fundraising event. We're going to celebrate, as usual, entrepreneurial leaders, people that really are stalwarts in Chicago, and corporate leaders, and then a couple of startups. It's going to be super fun. And if people are interested in supporting us and helping out, just go to Google and put in 1871 Momentum and you'll find it.
My last question for you just has to do with, is if anyone's listening to this and they're like, oh, tech sector, tech industry conversation, I'm going to roll my eyes. It's not for me. I don't care. Mm-hmm. You see the tech industry, because of its success, reshape and remake the city of Chicago. New buildings, you see just with the merchandise mart alone. But it's much more than just the tech sector or just about that industry. Mm-hmm. It has an impact that you can actually see and an effect on how you live in Chicago.
Right. I think tech right now we talk about it as a sector, but we could easily just talk about it as it just is, right? It's just there. And so when you think about, you mentioned Accenture early on, that's a tremendous professional services firm. They're not a tech company, you know, solely, right? They do tech, but not only tech. BMO is building a tower. They're a bank, right? But tech is underpinning everything that we're doing and reimagining how work is done. And it's certainly going to have, it's had an impact already, but it's going to have a bigger impact as time goes on. And you know, how jobs are changing and what the jobs of the future actually are going to be. Many of them won't look anything like what we currently have.
Great to see you. Thanks for coming in. Yeah,
thanks,
Betsy
Justin.
Ziegler is the CEO of 1871, the great tech incubator here in Chicago, and they've got their big event coming up in September called Momentum. Check it out. All right, so coming up, the 9 o'clock hour, CLTV joins us, and we have so much more to do, including a conversation with T. Marie Hannibal, who is the author of The Warrior Code, which is 11 principles to unleash the badass inside of you. That's coming up here on 720 WGN.
Live from the Allstate Skyline Studio.
Steve Cochran on 720 WGN. La, 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 la. La, la, la,
la. La, 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 la. Justin Kaufman in for Steve today. Hello to CLTV. And, of course, to 720 WGN as we continue. Wrap up today's great show coming up a little bit later. T. Marie Hannibal will be here. Talk about her new book, How to Be a Badass. that applies to you, Dave. I know that you've been looking to be more badassery in your life.
Yes. Yeah, that's one of my goals.
That is. Well, we're going to be pretty badass at the parade tomorrow. There's a parade tomorrow, the big block party WGN Morning News does every year. It's in Naperville. We're broadcasting live from it. And I'm very excited about this because they have a parade in the 9 o'clock hour.
Right.
And we get to do play-by-play for the parade.
Do we know that we have the broadcast rights to the parade? I mean, do we have to get this cleared by anybody?
I don't know. That's a great question.
What are you guys wearing?
Oh, yeah, we need to, we need to coordinate.
Because, you know, we're doing this thing with TV. All of a sudden, we got to look good, makeup.
All right,
yikes.
Here's what I'm going to wear. I'm going to wear I have a new polo. It's kind of like a polo-ish with a collar.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's got a bunch of ice cream cones on it.
Does it have the crocodile on it?
No crocodile.
Oh,
that'd be good,
we
too.
We need that.
And then I think I'll pull out my pink pants, my pink jeans.
Oh, no.
First of all, I don't know.
At least we'll be sitting down.
We're not actually going to be on TV. And the WGN Morning News will be on TV. It is the WGN TV block party. That doesn't mean it will be on TV.
Right.
And actually, we're not on CLTV tomorrow either.
Oh.
So we can wear whatever we want.
We could do it just like they wear. If you like any news anchor, they got the suit coat on the top and maybe some shorts on the bottom. That's what you do, right?
That's what I do. So,
you know, Dave's right. The cameras will start on the, you know, WGN Morning News team when the show starts. But after a while, it's going to be hard to ignore what's going on the radio side.
Yeah, that's my point. If I got a good look, if I got my pink pants on, don't you think that the producers at WGN TV would be like, we got to get off of Potash. Kaufman's got some pink pants on.
Yeah.
Now, that might work, but you know what else? I think Mary hit on something with the alligator. I think
let's do a theme.
Given that the alligator is like captured the community attention right now, I think if you guys dressed in alligator costumes,
like full on,
full on alligator costumes, then you'd get the cutaways.
How about
sure
just Izod shirts?
Yeah, you paying for those?
I think
we
you
got
need
the
to be,
little alligators on them.
You need to be full alligator. I think
that's it. That's Justin.
Yeah,
you can be in the parade then if you wear an alligator costume. They will put you in that parade.
Oh my gosh! How about it? Let's get an alligator costume float. We'll start. I'll start working on it now. I'll get a truck. I got to get a truck.
Think we got enough time?
A flatbed.
Yeah,
we got 24 hours.
It went so well at the halftime show a couple years ago. The alligator suits. So
those are shark suits.
Oh, we'll get sharks. Yeah. We'll get alligators. Anything that's in the water.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. No,
we could have an alligator race, like the sausage race.
Yeah, right.
Just run up. I think we can wear shorts, can't we? We're going to be outside.
Yeah,
it's
whatever
be warm.
Yeah. Are you angling to wear shorts? Is that what you're doing?
Well,
you're trying
to
get permission.
Yeah, I don't normally when I'm wearing here, but I know people who are on the air in shorts every day.
Yeah,
sundresses,
pink pants.
I might do that.
630 or 815. I did radio in tiny Chadron, Nebraska. We would broadcast our annual summer festival parade every year. We called it Paradio.
That's good.
That's good.
Nice. That's good.
Yeah. So this is not the first time. I had said earlier that in history, in all of humanity, in the history of humankind, this will be the first time a parade was broadcast on the radio.
Well, think how cool it would be if you're watching it on WGN-TV.
And then you turn the sound down.
And then it's like you get the bonus coverage on WGN radio, but will we be in delay? That would be the only thing, and then you're seeing the floats.
Joe won't be here, so it's all on Heideman. Mike Heideman, you're going to have to be the guy who puts in our ear the little fun facts, right? You have to be like, now what you need to know about this right here is this guy is, you know, you got to give us like some, so I can say something like, you know, Dave, this float, actually, this truck is the same truck they used in the Columbus Day Parade. Like that kind of stuff, you've got to be able to give that to us.
Absolutely. Right. I'm loading up all the Naperville facts right now, actually.
It's really good. This person, his favorite food is corn. Like that kind of thing. I got to have that. If I don't have that, then I feel like it's...
500,000 roses were used to make this float.
Right here, this alligator is actually living right now in the humble park. I haven't found that alligator yet. Okay.
Did you know this guy is actually an alligator trapper?
Exactly.
Alligator hunter? Right.
And Michael's actually looking up that stuff because he's never been to Naperville.
Whoa!
Isn't that a
Michael's
shocker?
Never been to
Who's never been to Naperville?
Yeah.
Wow. Crazy.
I have nothing to do with... I'm not a Western suburban guy, but I've been to Naperville many times.
Yeah, Michael, how are you going to get there?
Well, Michael is a city guy. Let me defend Michael here. You're a city guy, right, Michael? So
there's
really... Sometimes it's really difficult to get to some of the suburbs if you live in the city.
I rarely leave my bubble of the city, so...
Do you have a car?
It'll be hard. I don't have a car. I drive a scooter, so it's going to be a little bit more difficult to get down there.
Scooter. You can dump it off in Cochran's yard.
That's a good idea.
That's good.
I don't think you'd like that very much, though.
Yeah.
We have a great transit system, you know.
Oh, what's that? I'm just joking.
Metro?
I have a funny story about that, Mary. You like this. I saw on Twitter last night, I think it was today, someone monitors the police scanner, and someone called in complaining that someone had left one of the shared electric scooters in front of their house, and they wanted it removed. They called the cops. They called 911.
Welcome to the new normal.
Yeah, they're like, I don't want this scooter. Someone left their scooter. Get it out of my...
Just pick it up and throw it in someone else's yard. Throw it in the alley, you know?
630 says, how about we all wear different color Crocs? That could be a way
I have
to
some Crocs.
Play to the
I
alligator.
Don't have any Crocs.
I have an extra pair. My wife's got a pair you could borrow.
They make your feet smell.
Mary, you're the only person who could possibly come up with
it's
something
true.
So negative about Crocs.
It is true. Yeah, and my husband wants a pair of Crocs now. And I said to him, I go, really? No.
No.
That's
Are
good,
you a
though.
Doctor? Are you a gardener?
Are you on your feet at all?
Yes.
That is good, though. Crocs, I mean, that keeps the theme.
I know.
Keeps
that. Good. Well, that would be funny. That is a good idea, because they come in all cool colors.
Maybe I'll do...
What size shoe does Karen have?
Can't say.
You don't know?
I can't say.
You
I
don't know what size shoe you're wearing.
What were you saying, Justin?
I was going to say, maybe like an alligator, like an alligator shoes or like alligator belt. Don't they do like an alligator bolo tie?
Okay,
alligator?
Again, the Izod shirt, the alligator. Yeah. Where's this money coming from?
I used to have an alligator purse.
There you go. See?
Used to have one.
Used to have.
I don't know where it is.
We need to take a trip to like the Woodfield Mall.
Goodwill.
Yeah, Goodwill might have it.
Okay, now we're building a float, going to Woodfield.
Yes, dressing an alligator.
All this in 24 hours.
There's assignments.
IZOD works. I tell you, IZOD works.
And if we're lucky, they'll capture the alligator later today, and it will be the grand marshal of the parade itself.
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of responsibility goes with being a grand marshal, Steve.
Yeah, it's so, probably not one an alligator by himself.
How does he wave?
He's got his little hands. Yeah. Got a little, don't they have little hands? Little tiny hands.
Little tiny hands.
Yeah.
I can't wait for this story to go from how fun to that alligator takes somebody's torso off, and we're like, not so fun anymore.
Well, you see what they're using to trap him?
No.
Smelt and rats.
Ugh.
Delicious.
I used to eat smelt all the time in northern Wisconsin. Fried smelt, the best.
But you didn't eat them with rats.
Oh, well, not rats.
On the
no.
side. You put them on the side.
I don't have any rats in northern Wisconsin.
Dead or alive, Dave?
That's a good question, Super Joe.
Yeah.
I'm assuming dead to get them in the cage, but who knows?
Well, we've got plenty of rats in Chicago, so that shouldn't be a problem.
Yeah, right? It's funny because I was talking to somebody about rats the other day, and I was like, oh, I haven't seen rats in my neighborhood in a while. And they're like, oh, I live on the north side. I got tons. And then I jinxed it.
Yeah, right. You can't stay.
I got out of the car, and I looked over to the left, and this huge rat just like, not even running, just kind of like jogging.
Yeah.
Just kind of looking.
Looked over at you.
Yeah. Like, on the left. Said, on the left. I was like, well, okay.
Now Michael really wants to go to Naperville.
You got to go for the Riverwalk. That's classic.
Riverwalk's great.
Nice, there.
Man. Yeah.
Naperville, Mike, is, they have everything Chicago has. Like, they have every restaurant that Chicago has. At some point or another in the 90s, they went, okay, everybody in Chicago loves that restaurant. Let's just duplicate it and put it in Naperville.
Really?
So the downtown Naperville has like everything from, I don't even know what the, every restaurant that you would know in Chicago is in Naperville.
It's like the suburb of Chicago, or the big, or the Chicago, how do I say it?
Junior Chicago. Chicago.
Junior Chicago, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, everyone always talks about how great it is. Is it a very big town?
Yeah, it's big. I mean, the downtown's cute and quaint, and I don't think it's actually a huge downtown, but the actual Naperville is the third largest city in
third
Illinois.
It's either third or fourth after Elgin, right? Or after Aurora.
Aurora.
Yeah.
Aurora, I think, would be number two. Maybe Elgin and Naperville are number
Chicago,
three.
Chicago, Aurora, Rockford, Joliet.
Oh, so we need to make the top five. Maybe it's,
And then Naperville.
See, you guys will be right down the street from where I went to high school.
Ah.
Naperville North. Uh-huh.
So will we see the statue from where we are?
You know, I think it's on the other side of the building.
Okay.
Joe, are you bummed? You're going to be in Vegas tomorrow. Are you bummed you're missing work?
Oh, yeah. I'm so bummed. This is, I'm glad you brought this up. I've been struggling big time with, you know, the crew being out in Naperville.
Yeah. He can't say with a straight
face.
Thanks,
Joe. Thanks for your support.
Nice try, Joe.
I think we should all show up en masse, too, to Cochran's house after it's over.
Yeah.
Just show up on his front door and ring the bell.
He's having a barbecue for us, didn't he tell you?
Yeah, how great is it that we're going to be broadcasting from Naperville and Steve won't be there?
Well, he's coming over.
Oh, he is?
Yeah, he's going to be with us, I think, for an hour.
Why doesn't he come over at the early part?
For a benefit afterwards.
Yeah, why doesn't he go for the early part, and then I'll come in after that? You know, just like that's work it out that way.
Really.
Why am I coming for the early part?
That's between you guys.
Hey, I got a show to do tonight. I'm on Extension 720 tonight.
Hey, did you guys see that thing with Roe about his video showing off his new toilet?
Yes.
Speaking of barbecues at their house, he had a barbecue at his house for the afternoon show, and they were doing a video on his toilet. It's hilarious.
That's great.
Everybody's got to check it out.
I'm annoyed by that story, too, because I did not know.
It's on the website, by the way.
Usually, I'll crosstalk with Ro, and then we start Extension 720. I'm on right afterwards. The other night before, I didn't know about this barbecue.
Mm-hmm.
So I walk in, and Ro runs out the studio. He's like, no crosstalk. I got to go. I got something important to do. And I had to wrap his show, meaning they had a band on.
So he could cook the steak.
Yeah. So, he had the band on, so the band wrapped, and I'm like, all right, band, this is great. This
Who are
is
you?
The Ro Khan show. I'm just a guy. And so I tossed the news. I'm like, hey, man, he had an emergency. He had to go somewhere. Yeah, it was to go cook steaks and get ready for his barbecue.
Yeah, for the afternoon show.
For all of his co-workers and stuff.
Yeah,
I'm like,
nice.
Come on.
Well, not all his co-workers.
Not
well,
all.
Right. His co-workers.
His co-workers.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty funny. But
so I think you're right, Mary. I think Steve ought to be hosting a barbecue for us. If Ro's doing it for the afternoon show,
exactly.
Where's ours?
I want to see Steve's toilet.
okay. that you just totally right wrecked there. This whole concept.
Does he have a bidet?
Yeah,
I don't know.
Flash out then and bring the lights out. All right, we'll take a break here. Come back. Walter's perspective after they're talking about the World Cup.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
Coming up, Team Marie Hannibal will be here. She is the author of The Warrior Code, 11 Principles to Unleash the Badass Inside of You. She's a former Marine, also American Grit co-star. We'll talk with her coming up after Steve's News at 9:30. And Bill and Wendy coming up at 10 o'clock today here on 720 WGN. Right now, let's get Walter's perspective, which is sponsored by HearingHealthCenter.com.
If you can, put things aside for a few minutes and think about that ticker tape parade for the champions of World Cup soccer, the second cup in a row, fourth cup of the last five, a U.S. dynasty in soccer, a team as dominant as any team in any sport, quick and smart, consummately skilled. If you didn't watch the World Cup final, you missed a spectacular show of soccer power and love and emotion. The ticker tape in the Canyon of Heroes in New York was the latest among hero parades that have honored presidents and Queen Elizabeth, Winston Churchill, Pope Paul II, John Glenn the astronaut, Van Cliburn the pianist, Bobby Jones the golfer, the New York Yankees, and now, for the second time, the U.S. women of the World Cup. And if you haven't heard their message, you sure will. That they have had enough of the blatant, oh so blatant, gender discrimination by the men in charge of soccer. For the women, inadequate medical and support personnel, second-class travel conditions and soccer promotion, sexual and emotional abuse, and of course, money. The bottom line, basic salary for women in World Cup soccer, $75,000 a year. For men, $100,000. With bonuses and product advertising, women are earning up to $99,000 a year. Men, up to $260,000. Yes, it's true what the men who own soccer say, that man games deliver more revenue than women games, but the women sacrifice, train, and endanger their bodies equally with men. And are committed and talented equally, and are winning the games and the television ratings and profits more than equally. So for sure, women ought to be paid at the very least equally. I'm Walter Jacobson, and that's my perspective. For more, visit WGNradio.com or download the WGN Radio app.
The Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
Thicker skin, I'm a warrior. I'm stronger than I've ever been. I'm a hammer.
Steve Cochran Show here on 720 WGN and CLTV. I'm Justin Kaufman in for Steve. Dave Ennett's here, Steve Grzanich, Mary Vandeveld, and our guest, the author of The Warrior Code, 11 Principles to Unleash the Badass Inside of You, T. Marie Hannibal, a former Chicagoan who is back in town, of course, a star of American Grit on Fox, and also a former Marine. And Team Marine, nice to meet you, and thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me, guys.
So this is so let's talk about this book, because I was trying to convince Dave that he needs to be more of a badass.
Everyone's got to be more of a badass.
Okay, so it's not just me.
It's not just you. No matter what level of badassery you're at, you can always up it some more.
Why a book? What, you know, because you've had such a life of working, of course, in reality TV, but also as a Marine. Why write this book?
Well, originally, I wasn't going to write the book. I had turned them down when they came to me about the book, and I felt like I wasn't quite ready to get naked in front of the public, so to speak.
So to speak.
Then I came back to it and said, you know what, let me go ahead and put my story out there. I think more people need to hear. The story resonates with so many people. So getting the story out there, I think, was very important.
Your story is multifaceted. I mean, obviously, you know, the principles to unleash the badass, we'll get to that. But you grew up in Chicago. Mm-hmm. You have a long history that's very interesting about being the first one of the first females in a Marine class, mm-hmm. which is amazing. Your experience, of course, in Iraq. But I'm much more interested in Chicago. You grew up and you had a hard time. You got expelled from school. You seem to have a lot of adversity that you overcame to get to where you are in life right now.
I did. I think early on, before the military, I started doing first. I think I was probably the first student to be expelled from all Chicago public schools. So don't want that to be my claim to fame.
Sure.
I think it's just a matter of just putting the story out there again. And yes, I did go through a lot of adversity growing up and getting into my own way, so to speak. But I had that mom, that Madea type mom, who made sure I still, you know, kept on the straight and narrow as much as she could. You know, I still rebelled crazily growing up, but she was still that mom that when the house lights, you know, when the street lights came on, you need to be in the house. And she would come out on the front stoop in her nightgown and embarrass the hell out of you just to make sure you're back in that house. So that kind of helped me kind of stay and not get too far away from my path in life.
When you are having a childhood where you are having to overcome adversity, but you also are having, like you just said, a pretty disciplined experience with your mother, how does the military help you? Because you went to military school and then you went into the military, but how did the military help you turn into the woman you are today?
I think it just gave me a little bit more discipline. I had that yes sir, no ma'am, no sir mentality growing up from my mom. I respect my elders. You always say yes ma'am, no ma'am to your elders. So that kind of continued on into the military. But the military just kind of gives you that sense of brotherhood, so to speak, and sisterhood. And it gives you that kind of intensity of staying on that beaten path and knowing your focus and staying driven towards your focus. So I think I was kind of able to kind of hone in on those skills and take them with me where I am now after retirement.
So which was tougher, your childhood or the military?
People ask me that. I would say my mom. My mom was the old school mom. So when I say she was tougher than any drill instructor, I mean that. So it wasn't the drill instructors that scared me at all. It was that sense of I better not fail this and go back and face mama. So she was definitely tougher.
So what's the warrior code?
I think the warrior code is just all about unleashing what it takes to keep driven, to finding your inner space and making sure that you keep out these negativities that kind of come towards us. We take away those friends that really aren't doing anything with their lives and keep going anyway. So that warrior code kind of opens up 11 different principles to what I think it takes to just be that bigger, that badass. No matter how much of a badass you already are.
Dave's a badass, as you can see.
I can see. But it helps you want more, go more, go bigger. So I think in every stage in my life, I've always tried to go bigger, even if it scares me. Do it anyway.
There are, when I look at your resume and your bio, there are points in your life, there are chapters in your life that we could spend hours on. Mm-hmm. I want to talk about being deployed. Because as a woman, you were one of the only, if not the only woman, in your battalion, or not battalion, but your crew or your unit.
I was the only one who went out there.
And this is 2003. Talk about that. How hard was that? Was it something that is overblown in the idea that a soldier is a soldier? Or was it difficult being the only woman deployed with your unit?
I think it's difficult, but it's not something that's not doable, if that makes sense. For me, I had to battle just to get my name placed on that list to be able to deploy in the first place. At the time, I was a single mom, and I had a officer in charge of me who was not having it. He and it wasn't that he felt my place was here rather than here. He just looked at me, and he was that father figure. So in his eyes, you have your baby girl back here. You really don't know what's out there. You don't need to be putting yourself in harm's way. Especially if no one's asking you to do it. But for me, it kind of energized, you know, seeing that, being that young corporal, seeing everything play out on the TV screens, and you just want to be a part of something. You don't want to be the one that's left in the rear answering telephone calls and doing the paperwork. You want to get out there to the forefront of it. So once I got out there to the forefront, I was one of 65 Marines that was out there as the advance party, so to speak, before the rest of our unit started coming out. And it was different. It was the challenges of not having someone like me to kind of share stories with or kind of go to when things go bad. I had those brothers instead. But I didn't face the things that you hear about. I didn't face the sexual assaults or anything. And not saying those things don't happen. but I just had a tight-knit brotherhood. They literally built me a dresser out of wood out there and cardboard. So it was just those people that I knew had my six no matter what. Hmm.
T. Marie Hannibal is our guest here on the Steve Cochran Show. She's talking about her book, The Warrior Code, 11 Principles to Unleash the Badass Inside of You. We'll continue the conversation. We'll take a break.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
Justin Kaufman in for Steve today. As a texter from 815 reminded me, there's no such thing as a former Marine. Once a Marine, always a Marine.
Thank you,
so
Carl.
I apologize to T. Marie Hannibal, who's our guest today. The book is called The Warrior Code, 11 Principles to Unleash the Badass Inside of You. It's a motivational book, and you talk about all the situations in your life, and we just talked about whether it be being deployed in Iraq or even your childhood. Where do you find motivation? I mean, when you're putting this together and you really want to talk about the 11 principles, where do you muster up the motivation to move ahead in your life?
I think for me, it's my kids. Even when I deployed, I remember keeping a picture of my daughter in what we call our cover, what you guys call your hat. And I would keep that picture there. And every time I would get feel a little bit depressed about being away from her, I would look at that picture, and that would be my motivation to keep going. Because I knew at the end of this, I would be reunited, right, of course. And at the end of the day, I felt like what I was doing was for my kids so they can do better, they can have better. So motivation can come in any form, whether it's you, whether it's your family, whether it's that promotion. You just got to find it. I think that's what a lot of people lack, that motivation. But once you find it, it's like the world, you know, is no limit to what you can do.
Is that the toughest thing, though, is to keep focused on that one thing, especially when you're in a situation where you could be in battle?
It definitely is. It helps when you have those positive people around you that can help you keep focused. Mm-hmm. And for me, when you have 64 brothers there that's there for the same mission, and they too want to get home to their friends and their families, it's like we are pushing each other forward. So having someone in that same kind of fighting hole with you makes a world of a difference.
All right, give us an example of some of the 11, you don't have to go through all 11, but the 11 principles to unleash the badass inside of you. Like I said, Dave's looking to be more of a badass.
Yes.
So what are some of the principles that you feature in the book?
I think my most important one, like we were just saying, having those important people, making sure you're surrounded by people that have your best interest. And I say, find your people, find your warriors, because it's important. For me, I felt growing up that I had to be with this group. You know, a lot of people here in Chicago, kids, they look at gangs for that sense of belonging. And you look at friends that may not necessarily be doing the best things in their life, because they've been friends with you for years, and you've been down with them for years. So you got to kind of look beyond that. Like, are these the kind of friends that are going to be able to help propel me? Or are these the kind of friends that's keeping me in my rut? You know? And everybody knows when it's time to kind of evaluate your circle, so to speak, and see, okay, if these people, I probably need to replace this guy, that guy, and that guy. And let's to keep an eye on this guy over here. You want to keep, I tell people, keep changing your circle. Find someone that motivates you. You should not be, and I know so many people say this, you should not be the smartest one in your circle. You should not be the only one motivated to do big things in your circle. So if you are, you probably got the wrong circle around you. So for me, I kind of find my other warriors.
Right.
That's important to me. And that keeps me driven. And when I feel like I can't do it anymore, they keep me on point.
What about the physical part of being a badass?
Ooh, the physical part. I think this book goes more on the mental part. Because although, you know, the physical part, when you look at warriors and you look at service members, yeah, we got the muscles. We try to keep in the gym a lot. But it's the mental tenacity that keeps us going through that 4-year enlistment or until you get to that 20-year retirement. You can't do that just with the muscles alone. You got to have that mental state.
Ah, mm-hmm. Bummer. Because yeah. That's me. I mean, you look at me and you're like, what an Adonis. Yeah, this guy
exactly.
is just chiseled.
Yeah.
I know.
And now to find out that
you give me some brains.
Yeah, you have to have brains. I don't know. I'm out.
You got this. I know you got this.
The other thing before we wrap up here, we'll talk about the book, but you also have your Operation Heroes Connect, which is your organization. Talk about that.
Okay, so Operation Heroes Connect, it's no surprise I am a foster child who was adopted in the city of Chicago. So my mom was a foster mom to over 35 kids.
Wow.
And they would come and they would go, and she would be that home for them to get back on their feet, for their parents to get back on their feet, their mothers, whatever they're going through. And for me and my brother, she chose to adopt us. When I first got to the Quantico area, I wanted to get involved in Big Brother, Big Sister. And I found that there was like a year and a half waiting list for a lot of these programs. So I remember sitting up at night and saying, okay, what if I just started something on my own? How hard would that be? And I actually posted it on Facebook. And, of course, all these comments started coming through. You should do it. Why not? So I started it. I Googled the heck out of stuff. I talked to people that were already doing it. And I started this program that partners at-risk youth with service members and veterans. And we've been running strong since 2011. And now we have our summer camp program. So every year we take about 75 to 100 kids to camp. It's absolutely free. It's an away camp, and it's facilitated by service members and veterans. Yeah. And the camp is a week long. And when I say we go through everything, whether it's fishing, tie-tying classes for the young men, empowerment classes for the young women. And the camp ranges from ages 9 to 18. So it's really robust, and it's really jam-packed for that whole week. So that's what kind of gives me my motivation.
There's some
that's
more motivation. Wow. There you go. T. Marie Hannibal is the author of The Warrior Code, The 11 Principles to Unleash the Badass Inside of You. She also grew up here in Chicago, and her organization is called Operation Heroes Connect. T. Marie, thanks so much for being here and being a guest here on The Steve Cochran Show.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for having me. And don't forget to pick up the book.
There you go.
It's everywhere books.
Or as Steve would say, get two. Get you two. Might lose one. You're careless.
Dave, do you feel more equipped to unleash the badass inside?
At least I know what it's going to take now.
Yeah. Some right? of them. Still got to get to those other 10 principles, because I think we only discussed one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, get the one down. Get the one down. And
I'm going to work on the one.
10. That's right. All right. That's going to do it for the Steve Cochran Show today. Coming up, the stories that matter with Steve Bertrand from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom here on WGN Radio. Bill and Wendy are here in studio. Good to see you guys.
Justin, how are you?
Have you figured out what you're going to wear tomorrow?
I'm sticking with it. I'm wearing the pink pants. I know everybody wants to do alligator theme, but I feel I want to stick out when they're sick of...
Oh, you'll stick out.
Yeah, they're sick of seeing Potash and, you know, Conrad up there and a little Tomasulo. And they'll be like, you know what? Maybe we check out the radio guy with the pink pants.
Well, if you wear those, you're going in the dunk tank for sure.
I'm wearing them, so I'll go in the dunk tank with them. Although they're jeans, so that's...
They're pink jeans.
Yeah, they're like pink jeans.
Oh, that's something.
Did you get them from... What are you guys talking about?
You steal them from Pete McMurray or something?
They're stylish. What are you talking about, you guys? It's not like the...
How pink?
I didn't go to the costume shop to get them. I got them at the...
Are they salmon?
They're like a salmon, yeah.
Oh.
Okay. That's not pink.
speaking of being a badass.
Peach. Yeah.
Right. Those are very badass pants.
Yeah.
They're badass pants.
Yep.
We'll be eventually.
2019, guys.
Right. The year of the pink jean.
I say they find the alligator during our show, Bill. So we'll have breaking news.
Yeah, we'll have that ready.
Well, they found the alligator. It's in Humboldt Park.
Well,
Lagoon.
I know, but capture
him. Bring him to justice.
The last I saw from Block
Club.
What
did he do to you?
Yeah, right? They said that that alligator Bob is saying that the alligator is getting very comfortable with its surroundings.
Oh, he is.
I thought we were referring to it now as Croc Obama.
No, it's,
I've
think
heard
it was
many names.
Chance the Snapper.
Oh, that's good, too. Oh.
All right. What do you guys got on the show?
We'll talk about jobs that used to be important parts of society that no longer exist.
Okay.
And other things.
I'm trying to think of what those might be. Dog catcher? No, you still need dog catchers.
There's still dog catchers.
Radio host?
Yeah, radio host. Steve.
Oh. News coming people.
Coming up, Bill and Wendy. Yeah, you don't need it anymore.
See? Robotron 3000 has replaced us.
We'll do that and other things. And there's a death in the world of celebrityism.
Oh. Yep.
One of Bill's favorite movies, and I think it was based on you.
Yes, that it was based on me. No. So we'll discuss that at great length.
Have a great show, you guys.
Have fun tomorrow at the block party.
Thank you. Pink pants.